Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in. Welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring, my boxing fans' official radio show. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, and we're back. I know we weren't around last week. I went out to the Robert the Ghost Guerrero and Marcos Chino Madonna press conference to announce their meet that's going to be happening in San Jose at the HP Pavilion. So I got kind of stuck in traffic, man. I wasn't able to get back to the house to get on the radio here on time. So by the time I got in, it was already too late. They weren't going to let us log on, so I apologize. I'm waiting for my co-host, Gable Montoya. We got my producer, David Chen, who's always running the switchboard, making sure everything is run smoothly. Hey, this past weekend, man, some fights that are really disappointing, you know? And the disappointing part is that we thought we were geared to have a great fight happen between two guys. One guy making a comeback, Paul the Punisher Williams. Another guy to see whether or not he's going to move up on the ladder to be moving from contender to serious contender. That's Erislandy Lara, who did a fantastic job mimicking what Sergio Martinez did, mimicking to the point where he was landing the right punches and kind of, you know, moving forward and boxing Paul Williams, not mimicking Sergio Martinez in that good night, put you back to sleep punch. Let me chime in my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. What's up, Gabe?
How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing good. I'm actually happy. I can hear you. I'm actually happy that the New Jersey State Athletic Control Board suspended the Williams versus Lara judges, because those judges, man, I just couldn't believe what they were seeing and what they were judging on that fight, what they were scoring on the fight. I mean, you know, after that, this is the thing, is that you had two of the Al Haymon fighters on the card. You know, Rico Ramos trying to do a coming out power party on HBO. He was not having his night. And he was struggling a whole lot, and he was able to able to land that good punch to knock out. I'm trying to remember the kid's name that he knocked out that he had a fight on Saturday night. It was a Japanese fighter, and Aki Shimoda. And when's the last time you've seen a Japanese fighter on HBO? Mark Ortega asked me that question. I said, good question. I can't remember. But he was able to get him out of there, which is a guy that had been hurt previously, two fights before that. So you know why he was put in front of Rico Ramos. So it kind of leaves you the feeling, where does Rico Ramos go from here? He looks very vulnerable. He looks like a guy that could do some good things, but maybe being moved a little too fast from contender to championship, you know, level. This is a guy that I like to see a little bit more, but I think, you know, the Goose and Tudors may want to rethink what they're going to do with this kid and maybe hold them back from getting into some serious, serious battles with some other names that are out there that are now calling him out because of his Saturday night performance. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts were about him, Gabe, but this is a kid that's a little too green to be calling a champion.
Where does he go from here? Hopefully not on my TV ever again. That was 7 rounds of horrible boring, followed by one really lucky punch. George Peterson, if you're listening, trainer of Paul Williams, that's a lucky punch. Not the one that knocked out Paul Williams with Sergio Martinez, but that Rico Ramos shot. I mean, that was swinging for the fences, hoping something will happen, and something did. You know, I felt bad for Aki Shimoda. You know, he comes over here from Japan. He's the champ, or, you know, the title holder. He's doing everything to win. And it was just like one moment of oops, I stood still and left my chin out there, and he just gets knocked cold. I mean, it's the beauty of this sport. But at the same time, just watching Ramos, you're like, God, I really hope I never see this person fight again. And maybe that's harsh, but I've been bored by him for a long time. It's like, great, you knocked him out. Like, now we're just encouraging the kid. You know, maybe he'll get better. You know, people in their first title shot, they tend to fight a little out of character, a little wilder, a little out of control. But I just, man, If we got to see more of him, can you imagine Adrian Broner and Rico Ramos on a Coke tour? Just
well,
set me on fire right now.
Oh, man, I almost spilled my beer here when you said that.
Yeah, let's just throw, you know, like Wiki Ride versus Sergey Zinjerek in the mix.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
We could have John Ruiz commentating.
We could have Spinks back in the mix, too. Throw him in there. you know, the thing is that I've seen Rico Ramos plenty of times live, you know, and it's his style. The kid does have the right tools to do the right things. It could be an added of a little of this, maybe being on HBO, being televised in front of tons and tons of millions of people that are going to be watching him. But if you watch them prior to that, you're going to sit there and go, well, he's been a little bit more active, a little bit more exciting than he was on Saturday night on HBO. So I'm not going to pull the hammer down on the judgment on him at this moment. You know, I do want to see a little bit more out of him, but what I saw out of that fight, Gabe, was a kid that really just he's not ready yet. You know,
He's not done cooking.
Yeah, he's not done cooking. Rigo out there calling him out, saying that he wants a piece of him. Hey, yeah, you do. I think anybody right now that is in his division would want a piece of him because it'd be the right moment to get a hold of him just because the fact that you know he's going to be getting some HBO dates. Now, whether or not HBO approves of the fights, you know, really depends, you know, because, like I said, he is under the Al Heyman stable. But hey, let's move on. Let's talk about this Williams and Laura fight. What happened in that fight? I mean, you know, Peterson, all due respect to Peterson, good trainer. He's done enough to get Paul Williams where he needed to be. But after that just clean knockout when he had on the second fight, his rematch with Sergio Martinez, and we got to applaud him because he wanted that rematch because of the criticism that was coming down their throats about them losing that first fight with Sergio Martinez because it was so close. It was just that close. You know, it could have went either way. It was it was a good enough argument to make with anybody, okay? And I think you'll walk away thinking, oh, well, maybe he did win. I'm not sure. But they had to find closure to it. And the closure was that overhand left hand catches. Was it the left? It was the left hand, right? Yeah, it was the left hand that catches Paul Williams walking in with his hands down and puts him to sleep. Then you go into this past Saturday night, okay, with Laura, and you saw no adjustment. You saw the same guy with the hands low trying to throw bounds of punches but was getting clipped with that same overhand left and just being outworked. The bigger punches, the harder punches, and the head being snapped backwards was Williams. I mean, in a lot of ways here, Gabe, I was rooting for Williams, but when watching that fight, I was really feeling bad for him at the same time. You know, I mean, Laura came out, he did his job, and it should have went to the right man. And now they're saying there's going to be an immediate rematch because of this outcry of this judgment between the three blind mice. I mean, what more can we say about Paul Williams? You know, ironically, Roy Jones Jr. was calling for retirement. I thought that was a little hilarious.
You know you're bad off when Roy Jones is going, dude, you should retire. You're getting hit too much. Like, okay, Roy, I don't know, maybe you got knocked out, you must have forgot about your last fight, I don't know, but I thought that was just kind of hilarious. It was funny, at one point he said it, and you know, you can't let yourself keep getting hit by the same punch like that, and Max Kellerman kind of paused and went, right. it was just kind of heavy. It was like, I kind of want to say something, Roy, but
I'm gonna leave it alone. That's pretty much what he did.
I'm gonna let you figure it out.
What's up, Peter Yema, who's in the chat room? Chat room is open. I know I'm terrible about opening up that chat room. Hey, if you guys want to call in and speak to myself or Gabriel Montoya here on Leave It in the Ring, I'm not really sure who we have scheduled for the show because we've had a bunch of mix-ups of who was supposed to be on. But, hey, when we find out, we'll let you know. Hey, the lines are going to be open, 347-215-7598. call in here on Leaving the Ring. We want to talk some boxing between me and Gabriel. If you want to ask a question when we do have a guest, or you just don't have time to call in, but you want to talk about a particular subject, you can on our Facebook at Leaving the Ring or on Twitter. Hit us up on Twitter and ask what you want to talk about, or, you know, let us know your statement of what we're talking about this moment. Gabe, what do you want to do, man? You want to let in some other people shine in this conversation about Laura and Williams?
Yeah, okay, sure. We haven't really broken it down, but I mean, I think it speaks for itself. I had an 8-4 for Laura. I didn't really see Paul, and that was being generous, you know. I didn't really see how he won that fight, how anybody could. This is the thing that gets me is how two of the judges had even rounds, and one of the judges actually had two even rounds. I mean, how do you be that indecisive? You know, I've seen some fights where it's like, you know, that was really tough. One guy was winning the beginning, the other guy was winning at the end. You know, who do you give it to? You know, but you always got to ask yourself that question. I think it's a great question. Who would you rather be in this round? And more often than not, other than that giant thing on his head, I'd rather be Laura in every round. You know, he seemed to be in control. The ring generalship, when he fought on the inside, he wasn't taking too much damage. I mean, Paul was moving his hands. But this ain't amateur boxing. This is pro boxing. Clean, effective punching. And Laura did that all night. He deserved this win.
He did. You know, that was the big question, is whether or not, you know, moving up in competition, where was he going to go? Carlos Molina, who fought on the Showtime, undercard, was a guy that was, for Laura himself, was being criticized. He didn't train properly for that fight. Was this a fluke? And Carlos Molina showed that it wasn't a fluke. Carlos Molina actually showed that this is a real contender here. He fought Kermit Cetrone. I mean, you know, rightfully so. Kermit, it's been, a year and a half before his comeback. But, you know, Kermit was trying to land that shot. Yeah, you know, he was trying to land that big right hand. He couldn't do it. Molina was all over him. It was a good fight. It gave you the sense of, we got two junior middleweights here now that are going to make enough noise that if Canelo needs an opponent to make a statement, an opponent to say, okay, this guy's not a paper champion. Hey, you got two guys right there standing in front of you, in Laura and in Molina. I hope Laura gets his rematch with Paul Williams. Even though Paul Williams is saying, hey, three more fights, then retirement, he may be thinking about retirement now because he got a gift decision on Saturday night. Let's pass in some fight fans who want to talk about this terrible, terrible decision between Williams and Laura. Hold on. Let's get what's up, Chris? You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Good, brother. How you doing?
Doing good. All right. A few weeks ago when we were talking about it, I said that Laura was a very dangerous fight for Williams. I don't see what the judges were seeing. Like you said, clean, effective punches, and I think Laura did that all night. I also felt bad for Williams. I saw no adjustment, and I think, you know, mentally, I don't see the same confidence in his fighting style. I just, you know, he doesn't seem like the same Paul Williams. I thought so coming into this fight, he was going to have trouble, and I think he's going to be forced into this rematch, and I think Laura's going to beat him the second time. I just think Laura knows now, you know, I think Laura knows, you know, when he throws that looping left, he's going to probably throw punches, you know, also a hook after that with the right hand, or have some come after that. I think if he put combinations together, you know, he probably could have stopped Williams. But he definitely did good, and, you know, it's a shame that he didn't get the win.
You know, the funny thing is that me and Gabe were talking about this. I think it was on Tuesday, Gabe, but we were talking about, is Paul Williams shot? Is this a guy that's done? And we noted that this is a guy that's almost 6'3", that was fighting at 147. Now he's fighting at 154 and sometimes at 160, almost close to 160, 158. But you're getting the sense that he's actually fighting guys that are more in his natural weight. So you're not seeing an overwhelming fighter that normally was up against smaller guys at 147. You're seeing you're seeing him fight guys that are now 154, but walking in the ring at 168. You know, this is all I'm saying. I'm saying he's not a shot fighter, but he is definitely a guy that. Hold on, I think Gabe fell off. He's definitely a guy. Yeah, I can hear you. He's definitely a guy that you're now starting to see that he's an average fighter. And this is why I've always said, even in the past, you know, when I started doing YouTube videos, I did a whole video about why bigger men come in smaller weight. They come in smaller weight for numerous reasons, but one of the big reasons is advantages. And then when you see them gradually move up in the weight, you kind of start seeing that they're very ordinary because they're fighting guys that are now shedding down the pounds to fight at the weight they feel is where they feel they're going to have advantages. And I think that now that's where Paul Williams is at. He can't make 147. I know his camp and Goosen keeps saying it over and over, but me and myself and Gable have said it numerous times. He can't make that weight. So now you're going to start seeing a vulnerable and normal Paul Williams, a lanky, tall guy that doesn't know how to fight tall but fight short, and he's going to always have problems.
Right. Yeah, I think he's a lot like Margarito, and more particularly to me, he reminds me of Yanni Perez in the way we've seen him kind of fall off this year. Big, lanky guy for his weight class. That was his big advantage. And on top of that, he's a volume puncher. And then you add in, you know, just kind of youth and the ability to have that kind of activity. When that falls off, it's almost like Roy Jones in a sense. There's no technique to fall back on. The defense isn't that great. And you know, the guy's now vulnerable. He's kind of a sitting duck. He can kind of move his hands a lot. You know, he was busy on the inside. But was it effective? No. And now, you know, his head movement isn't that great. He looked sharp for the first couple rounds. And that's why I thought it was unfair of HBO to say, well, he's shot. And other people to say he's shot, he should retire. He looked sharp for two rounds. He was moving his hands well. The reflexes were there. Lara is the one that changed him through the course of the fight by landing that left hand. And then when he would come all the way in with his shell defense, kind of absorb some of those shots that Paul was trying to throw. And when he would leave, he'd always leave with a right hook, and it would land flush. And you saw Paul wear down in the second half of the fight. That's Lara's fault. You know, Lara did that to him. And I don't think it's fair. HBO was very biased in terms of they just stayed. They were almost like had Teddy Atlas syndrome. They picked one aspect to talk about, and they talked about it for the whole fight, no matter what was happening in the fight. It was, you know, look how bad Paul Williams looks. And they talked about not making any changes. And look, he's still getting hit with that punch. We look over at Showtime, and nobody did this angle. Urbano Antion is an uppercut magnet. You know, and Rios was hitting him with that punch over and over again. Urbano's been stopped by an uppercut, you know, against Acosta. That's what hurt him and put him down. He never fixed that flaw. Nobody ever asked him that question, are you going to fix that flaw? And so it wasn't a storyline. But because somebody asked Paul about that and George Peterson was so stubborn and kind of arrogant about it, that became a storyline, and HBO just ran with it. But, you know, I think a lot of this stuff, the judging, all that stuff, it kind of takes away that it was actually a pretty good fight. You know, and Paul is an action fighter that is wearing down, but so is Urbano Antion. I don't know if Paul should retire. I think he definitely needs to retool.
I think he needs to change, you know, management. I think he needs to change trainer. I think he needs an overall intervention, a makeover, you know. Send him to the Gatsby's or something. Get him a makeover. He needs a new trainer. That's just the bottom line. You know, the guy's a good fighter. He's fun to watch. You want to root for him because he does come to fight. He doesn't run, you know, and he's willing to fight anybody at any time. But just the way he's going along right now, the way he's trucking along, I'm sorry, he's just going to go after accident after accident after accident that he's going to wear out and he's no longer going to be a factor. Now, two more fights left in him is what's being said.
Well,
you know,
even that, I wonder, you know, because were they saying two more fights and then done? Like Paul said three. Were they counting this fight?
That's why I'm confused. I think they were counting this fight or maybe not. And if not so, they need to count this fight. Chris, I'm going to put you on hold really quick.
I just had a question for you guys.
Go ahead.
Is there an undercard fight with Khan and Judah, or is it just Khan and Judah on televised?
No, you know what? There was an announcement of the undercard. Let me look that up because
I don't know if they're going to televise it because Peter Quinlan was supposed to, you know, he was going to have a decent fight, and then his opponent fell out. He doesn't know who you know, he's going to be on later on the show tonight. He doesn't exactly know who he's fighting. There's a tentative deal out to somebody. I know James Crooklyn's is on the card against Alexis Loros, who's like 15-3. He's kind of a rugged veteran.
Gary,
he's going to give him some rounds.
Gary Russell
Jr.
Ronnie Rios is going to be on there. He doesn't know who he's going to be fighting. Gary's going to be fighting Paul Truscott. But I think, like Gabe said, I don't think it's going to be televised on HBO.
Okay.
No, I mean, Golden Boy might stream it, but, you know, really this show is kind of almost like Fight Night Club with higher caliber prospects
mm-hmm.
in Vegas. You know,
yeah.
You get up late-minute, last-minute replacements. They're going to be wins for the red corner all night long. That's going to be how it's going to go. And I'm going to love it because I'm going to be ringside. It's going to be awesome.
Hey, you know,
but
I'll see
it,
you
it
out
is
there.
What it is, you know? Yeah, it is what it is. It's not... I think the main event is totally competitive, and we'll save our talk about that for later. But, you know,
yeah.
Sometimes the Golden Boy is a young company, and they're developing some young talent. I don't really have a big problem. That was the same thing at Home Depot Center last week was, you know, the red corner was pretty much winning the whole time, with the exception of Carlos Molina, who pulled the upset. Sometimes you get those kind of cards, and as long as the mismatch is not so great that it's just like a one-round knockout, which – you know, Bruce Trampler at Top Rank will tell you, he's the matchmaker there. They don't like one-round knockouts. You know, that doesn't really show them anything. The fighter doesn't learn anything. And the fans also don't get their value for money. So hopefully this card will be good. It won't be too short with the rounds. But I just can't wait to get back to Vegas. That's just me.
Yeah. Chris, I'm going to put you back on hold, Chris. We got a lot of callers on right now. Okay, brother? Stay on hold.
All right.
Let's pass it to some other fight fans who want to talk about this disgraceful judgment between Williams and versus Lara. Or they may be saying, hey, I saw exactly what the judges saw. Let's see, Ness, who wants to talk. Williams and Lara, you're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. Brother, what's on your mind?
Hey, how you guys doing? You know, basically it's just sad that when we had such a great week of boxing, because Saturday night was definitely what we were all looking for after that horrible outing between Klitschko and Hay. And Saturday night, we had four great fights. Not that I was really in love with Rico Ramos' performance, because I felt he was getting dominated up until the knockout. And I really feel that if Rigan Diao gets the opportunity, Rico Ramos won't have that belt any longer. But it's just sad that Laura, you know, he already went through so much emotionally and mentally with the defecting and the leaving his family behind. And, you know, he was put in tough. And basically only his team really felt that he would do exactly what he did. And for him to go out there and leave his, you know, put his heart on the line. And, you know, as all the reports say, he's got a fracture. He'll be out for another 8 weeks. And he fought with that huge watermelon on the side of his head from a headbutt.
Right.
And he still pulled it off, and he did very, very good in my eyes. I felt that, you know, it was times when he was a little tired and probably holding a little more than he should, but he still was landing the clearer, the most dominant punches just in my eyes. I mean, Paul Williams is Paul Williams. He's always going to have high output, but the fact that in a round where he broke his own record and threw like 109 punches, he only landed 29 is, it's really sad, you know. It's sad to say that he's basically lost a beat or two, if not. And he hasn't looked good in his last four performances now. I mean, I just don't get where the judging is coming at. I mean, I'm happy that they suspended the judges, but I'm not happy that nothing is going to happen with this loss on Laura's record. I would like to see something like the Nate Campbell and Tim Bradley fight where they took it to court and it was at least reversed to a no contest. Something has to be done. I mean, it's just not fair that week after week there's a robbery. And if it's not a robbery, it's a controversial robbery where...
No, it's
know,
a robbery. It's a robbery.
No. Today,
yeah.
Saturday was a robbery. But, you
yeah.
know, then we had the Matisse and Alexander where,
right.
you know, some people saw it for Alexander, some people saw it for Matisse. And then, you know, a couple of weeks before that, it was the Matisse and the Judah. And, you know, it's just always something, whether it's a referee not letting McDonough fight when he's inside or taking a point for Elvis. I don't understand, you know, boxing right now is just, it's hard to be a fan. I mean, I'm never going to get turned off, of course, because I'm just a diehard fight fan. But it's just hard to be a fan of the sport, man. I mean, we just don't see these things in other sports. And, just another thing, we were having a conversation on Twitter as far as American heavyweights and American fighters as a whole and why we don't have that many in the heavyweight division especially, but in all divisions anyway. You know, boxing is is basically dominated by Mexicans and Latinos. You know, it's not that very, not very much Americans, but it's, I think it's a good idea. I don't know how to get it into play or why it was never put into play, would be elementary and high school. The, because all these kids get turned into basketball and into football because those sports are in there, are in their schools. You know, if we had some type of boxing program as, you know, children and teenagers and high schoolers, where maybe schools go up against other schools, the same way, you know, you're doing basketball, I'd say we'd have a lot of American champions, Kobe's and LeBron's, but in boxing, if something like that were to take place, because there's just no gyms right now. I mean, I'm from New Jersey, and for you to find a gym, you have to go at least 40 miles away, and you can just imagine the competition that you're going to get. I mean, the closest gym to me would be Global, where I believe Judah and Michael Perez fight out of, and Maureen Shea. But other than that, I don't know where there's another gym at. I mean, Patterson was full of gyms, but it just doesn't happen anymore. And that's probably what we need to get younger children and stuff into the sport, because they're always going to be drawn to they're always going to be drawn to football and basketball and baseball, because those sports are already in school. So it's cool to be, you know, on the varsity team. It's cool to date the head cheerleader. But if you were and that'll also create superstars, because those little events actually get very packed. You know, a lot of family members come out, and it'll just make household names. But I don't want to take up too much time. Basically, it's a travesty what happened to Laura. Unfortunately, I'm sure Paul Williams is going to get another HBO date. I don't know what happens to Laura now. Where does he go from here? If they'll give him another television date. A lot of people are talking, give him Melina a rematch because they both did so good last Saturday. I don't really want to see that, only because there's really no reward in that. They both,
right.
They both, you know, fought excellent Saturday. Melina definitely did his job. I mean, he impressed me. He shut things down.
Let Laura get his rematch with Williams. And let me tell you this. Golden Boy is really, really putting a bat for him right now. I mean, if you know Golden Boy, a lot of times I've seen this. Their fighter has lost. It was controversial, and it's just left alone. This time around, though, they're emailing plenty of media, making sure you're voicing your opinion. We were trying to get Laura on the show, but right now he's not capable of getting on the show to talk about it. I think that having Golden Boy, who has numerous dates with HBO, may have the power or insinuate at least to them, hey, listen, this is an outcry. Look what the fans are saying. Look at the feedback we're getting. There's a possibility you might see the rematch. Now, whether or not the Williams camp wants to take it, that's what it boils down to the end of the day. Golden Boy, I think, will do their part and back up Lara, and Lara will do their part in wanting to pursue it, you know, but it all boils down, what is William Camps going to do? Now, you're absolutely right. That decision should be overturned. It should be overturned. The suspension of these judges, that was a good thing. But it was a justice for Laura. He's always going to have that one blemish on his record that's going to be mentioned. Gable made a fantastic point. The commentators took away the performance of what Edson Lara was doing in his fight. They took it away from him. They were mostly talking about what Williams wasn't doing rather than talking about the guy on the other side and his performance. And now going back really quick about what you're saying about the elementary. You know what, brother? I completely agree. The only problem is you have a lot of parents that for some reason boxing is looked at as just a more brutal sport. What has happened to boxing? Why don't we have heavyweights? Why don't you see more American kids? You said it yourself. You're not seeing a lot of gyms being produced. A lot of the gyms that were around when I was growing up in my neighborhood were funded, you know, by the city. They were funded because that was the only way they can get gloves or bags and speed bags in there. The economy has changed so much that now gyms, there's a local gym around here, I'm not going to name their name because they listen to the show, I don't want them to think I'm taking a jab at them, because everybody's sensitive when I bring up somebody's name, but this gym charges $125. What kid can afford involved. I don't know what else to say. I don't know what else to do about that. Hey, Les, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother, because we got tons of people right now that are on hold wanting to talk about this disgraceful decision about Williams and Laura. Thanks for calling in, brother.
No problem.
I think too, Dave, you know, to the point about trainers, I don't think people go through the same process that they used to. I remember talking with Joe Goosen, you know, who's a very well-respected trainer, and I think Ronnie Shields went through the same process. You know, 10 years, Joe Goosen apprenticed at the Main Street Gym here in L.A., as you know, before he ever got to run his own corner, before he ever got to have his own fighter. He was there 10 years working under other good trainers and learning, you know, this is kind of an oral history sport. Yeah.
Right.
Things are passed down physically and orally, you know, through explanation and through repetition, watching how the pros do it. How the veterans do it, watching how a prospect is developed. That's a very long process to learn how to do it. And nowadays, you know, you throw a towel over your shoulder, put a stopwatch around your neck, and you call yourself a trainer. And a lot of guys, you know, you see these guys like George Peterson, who, you know, all respect to the guy as a person. He seems like a very stand-up guy, former cop. They had a lot of success together, Paul and him. But as they're moving up into these elite levels, you know, it's not looking too good, and all the flaws are there. You know, they can say, well, we got to 39 wins, and Paul's made all this money, and that's true. You know, and he's won a couple belts, you know, a vacant belt, and took Margarito's belt, which was a hell of a win. But at the same time, where are your other fighters? Where are your other wins? Where's all your championship experience? You're kind of learning on the job with this guy, and he's suffering all of your failings, all of your shortcomings. Although, you know, a good trainer would, you know, it goes back to the Quintana fight. People think it's the Martinez fight, but it's the Quintana fight that he was landing that left over and over again on him, hurting him over and over again with that, or not hurting him, but rocking him and landing cleanly. And Martinez picked that up. He duplicated it. Then he knocked him out with it. Now Lara's doing it. You know, I think what it comes down to is the guy has an unwillingness to change, and there's no way to get better if you don't do that. And I think that's an experience. But look at Tony Morgan, Berto's trainer in the corner, when Berto's losing against Ortiz. That corner was pure chaos. That's inexperience. It had never been in a crisis situation, but maybe once with Louis Colazzo. You know, and it was nowhere near the crisis situation they were in against Ortiz. So I think there's kind of a watering down process. You know, the amateur boxing isn't quite what it used to be, you know, with the headgear. And the computerized scoring, that's kind of changed over the years and diluted the skills. And on top of that, we don't quite have the same level of training that we used to. I think that's number one. I mean, look at how basic some of these guys are, or how ruined they are by watching Roy Jones and even Floyd Mayweather to a certain extent, and not really understanding what it is they're seeing. You know, Floyd is a very skilled fighter, and anybody that emulates him and understands his tools and tries to implement them, they would do well. But to use it, if their, you know, their speed and all their natural attributes fit that style. But like, I was watching this kid last week, former national champion, I won't say who he is, he's about to turn pro, and he's fast as hell, big for his weight class, he's like 122, looks to have all the tools, real long arms, you know, he could probably grow into 135-pounder, he's very young, he's like 20. But he's working the pads with his trainer, and I'm watching and going, boy, this kid's fast. He's throwing like 5-6 punch combinations. And in the middle of it, he throws the weirdest right hand I've ever seen. And it looked familiar. And the trainer looks at him and goes, what the hell is that? And he said, oh, well, you know, that's like my Roy Jones punch. And Roy, you know, Roy used to throw that same right hand. And he kind of throws it and then pulls it back, you know, kind of like over the top and kind of crooks his hand. And the trainer just looked at him and said, never throw that punch ever again. You're going to get knocked out doing that. You're not Roy Jones. And you've seen that kind of trickle-down effect of guys emulating guys that break the rules. You know, it's like Roy's an original. Don't try to fight like him. And look at him now that he's old. He's getting knocked out because of that lack of technique. I think there's a lot of things, you know, that this sport, I mean, if you look at it just from like a bird's eye view, there are so many problems. It's almost sometimes hard to see the good stuff, you know?
You know, you're right. And some of the problems, too, if you really look at it, is what you just mentioned right now. You know, you have trainers that are they're looking at particular things. They're looking at a glorified fighter that's worked on this technique that works for them. You know, some guys are born with a particular pizzazz about them. And
yeah,
they figured, oh, this could work for every fighter. It doesn't really work for every fighter. You know, you got to find what is workable with your fighter and what doesn't work for your fighter. You know, and then you kind of mold them from there. I keep going back with amateur fighters. Right now, over there in the desert in Palm Springs, is you're having the tournament out there. And you know, I wish I could have went out there, man, because, you know, I'm a guy that can watch anything. And I love the amateur fights. I could sit there and watch the amateur fights because you do get kids that come out to fight, you know. But it is shading down little by little. It is starting to get smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
You know, where you're seeing trainers that really honestly are not even trainers. These guys maybe took a class. I mean, I think I told this story here on Leaving the Ring one time where my son, who's a fighter, you know, and we were looking for a gym when we moved out over here to Modesto, California, and I took him out to Riverbank. And I think it was Riverbank. And the trainer there was wearing a sweatband head, you know, the bandana, the sweatbands. And the guy was throwing these crazy punches at the bag, telling these kids, okay. And I knew off the bat, this guy's never been in the ring. He's never fought. He doesn't know how to even, he didn't even know how to throw a jab. And my son was throwing, I mean, and Tristan at the time was, I think he was, let me see, he was probably about 7 years old, and he was pointing out the flaws of this trainer. He was like, this guy doesn't even have a good stance. And then, you know, we were there. I said, well, we might as well get our workout. You know what I mean? So I sent him out there, and the guy was telling my kid to just throw punches. Don't worry about technique, because in the amateur fights, nobody has technique. It's just about throwing punches. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. I said, hey, woo, you know, and, you know, this is my kid. I got to protect my son. I go, where did you learn how to train people? He goes, well, I'm on what the hell did he say? Something, a book. He already passed the A class or some shit like that. And I was like, what? There's no A, B's, and C's in boxing, fool. You know, I don't know anybody that went to college to learn how to box. You go to the School of Hard Knocks, and that's what you learn. And I, right away, I was like, come on, Terror. That's why I call my son Terror. Let's get out of here, dude. And that just kind of shows you that some dudes do Tai Bo and they think they're a boxing trainer, you know? Or fighter's fit. I've seen this thing they call fighter's fit. And the guy letting them throw punches and this and that for the girls. And the guy, you know, these set of girls coming out because they're trying to lose weight. And they call themselves boxing trainers. You're not a boxing trainer, you know? And we've had Virgil Hunter on the show, and he agreed. He, look, there's got to be some type of regulation. There's got to be something out there to really make trainers go through a particular thing before they're licensed, because ruining
Shane Langford, who trains under Freddie Roach, who's like his young apprentice, who the guy with one eye on 24/7, who's hilarious, and he's a really, really funny guy, and he trained me for a good long time. A little under, maybe like a year I was there, a year and a half. I started out with Pepper, and then I kind of moved over to him. But when we got to, like, sparring, my first time with Kingsley Aikiki, who's, like, you know, a super middleweight, and I was a buck 40 at the time, and in good shape. But I remember the day of the sparring, Shane looks at me and goes, you know, we never really worked on defense, did we? I was like, No, we haven't. Not really. You know, we did the patented wild card, you know, 1-2 duck under and do a hook to the body, you know, the classic Manny move. That's about it. That's you know, luckily I'd worked on defense with other trainers and with my martial arts guy, but not an encouraging thing to hear from your trainer. You know, we've kind of skipped that whole slipping punches and blocking thing. You know, that's indicative of how training is today.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? We get lots of emails, and and if I'm on Facebook or I'm on Twitter or if I'm on YouTube, whatever the thing is, I do get direct messages and I appreciate them. And a lot of them are, how do I know? This is the big question. How do I know if I got a good trainer? What is the one particular thing I should look for? And I'm going to say it here on the air. this is what I look for. If the guy's showing you, first off, footwork.
Yeah.
If he's just throwing you punches, if he's just showing you combinations, and he's just showing you how to throw punches, that's not a trainer. A trainer always goes from the beginning. In the beginning of a fighter, you need footwork. You got to know how to stand. You got to know how to pivot. You got to know how to move with your legs. Because, see, the thing is that your legs is what directs your punches. You know, it's not your punch. You know, you got to learn how to turn your hips. You got to learn how to turn your legs. After you turn your hips, and let's say you miss a punch, you got to learn how to return and set yourself for another punch and then slip. Step out. There's so many things in boxing. That's the funny thing is that a lot of people don't understand. There's so much stuff about boxing. But let's get away from that, because this is not a show about trying to teach everybody out there how to box. This is a show about venting out our disagreements and our and the bullshit that these judges are doing to our sport. Let's pass in some other fight fans that have been on hold patiently listening to me, myself and Gable ramble about how you should be a trainer. Let's pass in
Redondo said the same thing, though, man. Said the same thing to me. Start with your feet.
Yeah, absolutely. D, what's up, brother? You're on live right now, leaving the ring. What's on your mind?
What's happening, fellas?
Chilling,
hey,
brother.
Man.
Chilling.
Oh, my God, man. Y'all know I'm about to act a fool, man. These judges, man. Too much going on. Okay, what are they doing? They going on vacation? They suspended. I read where they said once they learn, take some more classes, they'll be able to come back, I guess.
You know, man, that's the...
I'm curious. Yeah, they're suspended indefinitely for retraining. But what I want to know is where's the commissioner or the people that appointed them to this position? What training is he going through?
Right.
You know, this is kind of a guy... The more I'm hearing about him, you know, and I'm kind of relying on my East Coast guys to kind of cover this. I cover CSAC, and I expect, you know, the East Coast guys to kind of drive through this one. But he sounds a lot like George Dodd to me, the commissioner here in California, somebody that doesn't really have a boxing background. He barely got into this sport in 2005, which is barely a few months before I got into it. And I certainly wouldn't be voting me to head a commission up, you know, no experience whatsoever. You know, some people don't even think I should be riding. But so, you know, to me, the problem starts at the top. And these guys, while they screwed up and did a poor job, are kind of the scapegoats, and people are happy. Yay, we finally suspended some judges, and there's some sort of consequences. But where's the consequences for Aaron Davis and the people that put these jokers at ringside? That's what I want to know. And how do you do an investigation in just a couple days and go, you know, we found no foul play. Nobody was, you know, there was no under-the-table activity going on here whatsoever. Wow, that's pretty fast. I mean, considering, well, I've done some investigative work, it takes a little longer than 3 days. You know, it's kind of weird. They're finding themselves innocent. You know, they're putting themselves on trial. Not buying it.
See, the right thing would have been to do is, okay, overturn the decision, man, and give that man that win. That'd be because everybody knows he won the damn man won the fight. I'm a Pauline fan.
Well,
He's from my state. I've been supporting him for, you know, but he lost that damn fight.
It's symbolic the way what they did, I think. Because, you know, there's a lot of close fights. Alexander Mattisse, we all felt pretty much the same way. But if you start overturning fights, man, where does it stop? And then you get to that, you know, because it's subjective. They said, you know, it's a subjective thing. You can't just overturn it. You know, we get into a kind of a dangerous area, I think, where we just start flipping decisions. I mean, somebody brought up to me, I don't watch baseball, but it was a no-hitter last year, Andre Galarraga. And the guy threw a no-hitter. The final out should have been at first base. Instead, the umpire blew the call and admitted later that he blew the call, lets the guy get on base. The guy loses his no-hitter when he should have had it. Now he doesn't get to be in the history books. He doesn't get that rare stats of a no-hitter for a pitcher. But they didn't overturn it. Even though everybody acknowledged we screwed up, they didn't overturn it. And I think in some ways that's kind of the right thing. Just acknowledge that you screwed up and we move forward. And what's more important is that HBO and Golden Boy and everybody involved treats Lara like the winner and doesn't treat Paul Williams like the winner. Give him another $1 million payday while Lara has to make $100,000 or whatever. They should get him in another high-profile fight, if not a rematch. That's all
I say. Rematch.
We all know what should happen. What should happen is they should fight again, different judges. They should, but that ain't gonna happen. That ain't gonna happen again. They're gonna keep Paul away from that dude.
This is what should happen. Let him have a rematch with the same judges, and let the judges have the same scorecards, but for Laura this time around. You know, and then we can call it controversial again. You know, and we can respect. We can suspend those judges once again. You know, This is a tough call. I mean, I agree with both of you guys and shouldn't overturn it. But as a fight fan, you want to see justice. You want to see it overturned. And you're right.
At least make it a no contest.
Yeah, at least make it a no contest. I think that would be good. But it does leave that open statement of, okay, you've overturned this one, and now everybody can make a case to be overturned. Now we got flooded rooms of court, you know, saying, hey, my fight was this close, let's overturn it. I say there's got to be some type of regulation. There's got to be some type of set standards so that we can argue about these particular points. And Golden Boy's just got to make their move now. Right now they've set it in stone. Let's move it forward. Throw those stones at the glass houses, shatter them, make more noise. Lara, give him his due right. Forget the overturn. Let's move him on. Get him Canelo. You have the power to make him fight Canelo. Get him that fight. He deserves it. He just beat a very dangerous 6'3" guy who's a value puncher who we thought that he was going to do fantastic. We just didn't know what kind of fighter was going to come out, but we saw this is a guy that can make head turns. He's won a lot of fans over this past Saturday night. I say, give him a shot. Hey, D, I'm going to put you on hold because we do got some other fight fans who are online that want to talk about this subject here, brother.
All right, definitely. Yeah, I'll come back and talk about what Paul should be doing and all that right there if y'all want to come back to me.
You got it, brother.
All right, man.
You know, I want to talk about Brandon Bam Bam Ruiz versus Urbano Antelion. Let's talk about the fight that did save Saturday night. The fight that made people forget about what happened with Paul Williams and Lara. This was a fight, man, really honestly. We knew there was going to be fireworks. I said it here on Leaving the Ring. Antelion should not come out. Want to go blow for blow with Brandon. We saw the outcome, but was it fun? Was it fun, Gabriel? I mean, was fantastic. I loved every minute of it. It was that fun to watch.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I mean, I was about like 3 or 4 rows back, and it was just brutal, man. The left hooks. I thought Brandon looked better in this fight. Granted, he was fighting kind of a guy with, you know, a wide style, a little bit tailor-made, and it was just going to come right to him. It's kind of his reward for getting through Acosta, in a sense. But, you know, his defense was tight. He didn't get hit with anything stupid. He did his homework. He knew that uppercut was going to land, and he landed both the left and the right uppercuts, and then started working in that left hook. And then the right hands that dropped Antelion were perfectly timed and obviously well-planned. It was just a hell of a performance, and just, you know, 3 rounds of just mayhem, dude. I could have asked for a longer fight, but, you know, that would have been unfair to Antelion. I think he's a guy that people should be calling for a retirement of a fighter. I think Antion's heading to that place. His punch resistance is not that great. You know, he's getting hit with a lot. He just fought, like you said, the wrong fight. You know, he should have been more patient. He should have not been so greedy and not so willing to go to war.
I think he went out there because he did want to make a statement, and that statement was to be that, look, this guy's a big guy, but I can take him. And not much really kicked in for Urbano, and you saw that. And you know what? You're right. I'm guilty of one of those guys that was like, damn, I wanted it to last just a little longer. It was short-lived in that fight, but, you know, Urbano, who I know personally, is a good guy, a very likable guy. There's nothing about him you just cannot like. But you get a sense, when you hear them speak, bro, that punch drunkenness is just coming. It's not fully taken over, but it's there. And he's an intelligent guy. He's a very likable guy. He's fun to talk to. He keeps it real. But you're sitting there, and you have to, if you have a heart, if anybody have a heart, and fight fans, we got a heart. You sit there and you go, really, guy? Come on, that's it. It's time to hang him up. It's time to just walk away. Now, whether if he does it or not, trust me, he's going to give plenty of other fighters fits. But you go back at what you talked about, Gabriel. He comes in with the wrong game plan at some times. You know, there's times where you just got to sit there and think, dude, you know, you're not the biggest guy. You're a good puncher. Very dangerous in your prime. But you got to sit back and think that I think his prime is gone and left. We're getting what he can muster up at this moment in his career, what he can muster up as a fighter. And is that good enough to go against the top elite? No. But is it good enough to go against B-class and C-class fighters? Yes. Is he going to make a fight fun by coming in with that mentality? Of course. We're going to get our money's worth. But is it worth your health? Boils down, no, it's not. It's not worth it.
Yeah. I think that's really what it comes down to is – Yeah, I think he's like you're saying, the wear and tear is showing. The defense isn't improving, and it's not like he's got the skill set of a Barrera, where he can kind of get back up on his toes and box from the outside. I just don't see that happening. You know. I don't know where he goes from here, but it's not. I don't think, and I hate to say it, but I don't think it's up. You know. So I worry about Antion. You know, I got to worry about all fighters. I mean, like. Look at Vivian Harris is fighting this Friday, dude. Guy's been knocked out in four of his last six fights or stopped in some way or another. Even one of the fights was a no contest because he was got a headbutt and was acting all cool.
But he's in worse shape than Ante Leon. I mean, this is a guy that shouldn't even be licensed.
Dude.
He's been knocked out brutal in the first round. I mean, Vivian Harris, I don't know him personally, but, man, let's have a little bit of a heart here with this guy. I mean, I just don't get that. It's terrible.
The people they're arguing, well, you know, Leonardo Tyner, who he's facing, is not that good of a fighter either. You know, so he's not in danger of getting, like, one punch knocked out.
How do you know that?
One, how do you know that? But two, oh, good, now he's in for a long beating.
Long beating,
that's
exactly.
Awesome. Yeah, even better. Let's do that for the guy that's been knocked out, like, back in April. You know, I just, to me, and I wrote this, I have a column coming out tomorrow called Random Thoughts, and it's just kind of exactly that. And that's the last one, is just shame on everybody involved in that.
You know, the thing, too, is that if you think about it, it's like sending a cop without a bulletproof vest into a bank robbery because the guy that's holding the bank, he's not a good shooter. You know what I mean? He's a guy that just shoots all over the place. So by your chance of getting shot, it's 1 out of 10. Don't worry about it. You won't get shot. It's just that.
You should be
dumb.
Fine.
Yeah, you should be fine. Don't worry about it. You don't need no vest. As a matter of fact, take off your shirt. Leave it alone. Let's just some other white cats. Go ahead. What are
unbelievable.
You
I went back and forth with, I guess, the publicist for CFC Promotions who's putting this on, Chicago Fight Club Promotions. And the whole card is kind of funky to me. You know, you've got the main event is between a 37-year-old and a 41-year-old. And the 41-year-old hasn't won a fight, just like Vivian Harris, since 2008. They're a new promotional company out of Chicago, and I'm like, if this is what you're offering, please get out of the promotional ring. And we kind of went back and forth, and the guy said, well, you know, I said, Vivian Harris shouldn't even be fighting. This is downright near criminal. He said, well, I tend to look at things in a positive light and just hope for the best. Well, that's wonderful. Tell that to Vivian Harris if he dies in the ring or if he's seriously injured. Well, we were hoping for the best, but then we realized you're Vivian Harris and that now you're hurt. You know, it really kind of sickens me, this sport sometimes, and how people will just kind of brush you off. And I was just trying to find out if he was with Golden Boy, but we started going back and forth about the fight. And I don't see any sort of justification for licensing him. And hearing the age-old, well, he passed the medicals. Okay, you know, sure. Did you guys do the full CAT scan and the MRI and really look at his brain and see what kind of damage is really going on in there? Or did you just have him follow your eyes, you know, follow the light with his eyes? You know, what exactly were these medicals?
Exactly.
I just don't, you know, we need, that's all I'll say.
You know, speaking about medical, I want to see the medical on that infamous toe right now with David Haye. I saw the picture. You know, I'm going to be the first one to say is that I thought I was really pumped up about this fight. I was excited. I even argued with fight fans, say, look, there's got to be a knockout between these two guys, you know? And David Haye, dude, what a letdown, brother. I mean, seriously, should you even show your face right now at this moment? If you're a David Haye fan, do you want to admit you're a David Haye fan? I mean, that's kind of sad, you know? Yeah. I don't know. Am I the only one? Let's put some fight fans on.
Oh,
you know what?
You're not alone.
Hey, fight fans, thank you. Thank you. I could see right now you guys are missing us. There's a lot of calls. I appreciate this. So let's patch you guys in. I know we're over here rambling between me and Gabriel. And
we got to talk with it about 5-6 minutes. Just let
So let's let in Tony, who wants to talk boxing here on Leaving the Ring. What's up, brother? You're on live right now. What's on your mind?
Whew, man, you guys are giving me a full plate to work with. So I'll talk as fast as I can here. First off, I'm glad you guys are back on the air. What makes that Leonardo Tyner versus Vivian Harrison worth it? It's for a USBO title. Are you kidding me? The second thing is when you guys are talking about boxing and the skills and the overall training and how boxers are losing the skills, it's very reminiscent to how jazz musicians were back in the 40s and 50s and how they could play a trumpet, and now you have these people that they don't have that same quality of skill. All the great masters have all passed on, and they've only shared that secret with so many people, and there's only so many Eddie Futches of boxing. So that's my take on that. Why we don't have American heavyweight right now, a lot of people believe and point the finger at what happened to Muhammad Ali. A lot of people look at that and say, you know, he was on top of the world, but nobody wants to end up getting, you know, put in a position of having Parkinson's disease or whatnot.
Oh, God,
I know that's all.
Yeah, that's just,
I know
that's, you know what? You know what's funny is that people that really don't know, they don't follow the sport. And this is another story. I'm watching the Vargas and De La Hoya. We went out to family members to watch it, and somebody, and my family members, they have their friends, their set of friends. This is where we were going. They were going to their house. So they had their set of friends. And there was a woman there, and she goes, I don't like watching boxing because it gives you Parkinson's disease. I said, what, really?
Yeah, exactly.
What, can you show me the medical record that have shown this? That's like saying, you know, like steroids. Steroids has been accused of giving you cancer, giving you, what is it, what else? Steroids has been accused of making you suicidal. But there's nothing medically behind it. There's no record of that. You know, there's no documents that tell you that this is what it's done. You know, boxing, yes. Is it brutal? Yes. Can it make you have a slur when you talk? I have a slur when I talk. I've been hit plenty of times. But it wasn't from boxing. It was from pipe falling on my head. I'm a plumber. I've been a plumber for 19 years. You know, I slur because I drink. I slur because I do a lot of things that are unhealthy in my life. Boxing is just one of those things that you can point the finger at. It's easy to point the finger at it because you're in the gym, you're taking punches, but you can't get Parkinson's disease. I've never met anybody. I mean, Freddie Roach, I've talked to Freddie, and I've asked him, did you get it from boxing? And he looked at me like, what? That is the stupidest question you can ask me, kid. Matter of fact, why don't you get your bag and your camera and get the hell out of my gym?
Yeah, no. You're totally right, but to the masses who just, you know, take things on face value and don't really pay attention to what really goes on, that's where they're like, oh, I don't want to do that. Why am I going to want to take punches and end up like Joe Louis and be broke when I could, you know, go play on a team and keep my money, you know? So I think those fall into place as well. I want to say this real quick about Paul Williams and the Lara fight. Absolutely, it should be a no contest. Aside from that, I really want to give props to a lot of the media heads out there that are really sticking to their guns and making sure that people don't forget about this. I know there's a couple websites out there that are working really hard out on this. And
Kevin Ioli in particular is really
right.
Kevin Ioli's been all over this thing.
Yeah, and I'm reading right now that they're even talking about maybe even legal action being pursued on this. So I honestly think that because of no other robberies this weekend, that it put a lot of shine onto one fight that we can actually point a finger to. You know, 2 or 3 weeks ago when we had, you know, argumentatively three different fights that you could say were robberies, well, we had a mixture of some writers saying this was a robbery and this one was fine, and then other writers were saying, well, this one's a robbery and this one's fine. Since we only have one and it's blatant right in our face, I think everybody's behind this, and I think only good can come out of it. Definitely those guys need to be suspended for life.
Right.
one last point, and I'll go. Is there any credit accountability that should be part on maybe Golden Boy and their backers for maybe not doing the homework on who the judges were ahead of time to stop them from even actually being able to even be the judges of these fights? You know, very similar to how David Hayes' camp was all throwing a big old fit about the referee. You know what I mean? Do we have to do that? Do we have to lock our doors to our cars so that way it doesn't get robbed? You know what I mean?
Well, I just think that I was thinking about this today, and one of the things is that this is a 12-round fight. And I remember the last 12-round fight that Paul was involved in that had some controversy was the Williams, or was the Cintron fight. And they decided to do local commission rules as opposed to ABC rules. And
yeah, I remember that.
I think maybe, you know, for these special attractions, if it's 12 rounds, the ABC should be involved. And maybe they create a subcommittee that looks over all this judging, and maybe the judging goes through the ABC at that point, and they appoint the best guys. You know, when the NBA has their finals and the Super Bowl's on, those are the best referees. Those are the guys that are graded over the whole year as making the least bad calls. You know, and they assemble this kind of all-star team crew of officials. Why doesn't boxing do that? It's because, you know, the judges are selected by the promoter. They're paid by the promoter. That decision is left up to the promoter. I think that really needs to be taken out of the promoter's hands immediately, put into somebody like the ABC, and then there needs to be an oversight committee that looks over these bad decisions and handles it. Because in this case, you know, Aaron Davis did the right thing. He suspended these guys because he didn't like their reasoning for their judging. But who's looking at Aaron Davis? The guy that put them at ringside. This used to go to the ABC, and it was a 12-round fight, but it's under New Jersey rules because it's not a championship fight, so the ABC doesn't touch it. I think that's wrong right there. I think that needs to change. Just run off the table.
Yeah. It's checks and balances, and boxing doesn't have it, unfortunately.
We don't have
but, hey, listen,
all.
Guys, I'm glad you guys are back on the air. I'm going to go ahead and head out, but thank you, guys.
Hey, no problem. Take care, brother.
Yep. Let me call Kid Chocolate, and I'll come back.
And I was talking to Wallach, who's going to be calling in as well to speak to
him.
Yeah. I was just talking to him right now. So he's just charging up his phone. He said he's going to call in, and we should be able to chop it up with him. I got a lot of questions for him, man. I'm actually a really big fan of him. We're talking about a workhorse. This is a guy. He's definitely a workhorse, you know?
Yeah. Let me grab the kid, and I'll be back. Yeah, dude, I can't wait to talk to Paul Wallach. I just like these, so, you know, like Steve Kim's article today, he's a blue-collar fighter, construction worker, and then boxer at night. That's just awesome.
Yeah, that's the Mickey Ward story, you know, construction during the day and boxer at night. You know, you got to always applaud guys like that, man. It just tells you how hardworking they are. They're just guys that are not going to, you know, let up. They're not, you know, they got to take care of business at home. And they're following through with their dreams. So you got to root for guys like that, especially when you make a guy by the name of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. I know some people are going to get pissed what I'm about to say. But you make a guy like Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. all of a sudden get the flu because you're the man that's being picked to be put in the ring with you after Alfonso Gomez reports he's got a shoulder injury. So you got to like a guy like Wallach who's going to make a fighter of that. Stature go, workhorse, construction, and boxes. This guy's a cop, you know? Gabriel Montoya back with Kid Chocolate. What's up, brother?
No, he's not here. He's still strength and conditioning, I think. He told me yesterday around 6 he'd still be finishing up, so maybe he still is. Who's the cop on?
Oh, I was talking. No, I was saying about Wallach, about what Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. was saying about him, you know, when he said miraculously, oh, I got the flu or there's something wrong with me. I can't fight this guy at this moment. This guy works during the day in construction and he's a fighter by night. No way. He's not a taxi driver by the day. I don't think so. I ain't going to fight this guy. This guy's crazy. And we're going to have Mike Ruiz a little later today who's calling out Randy Caballero, a friend of ours who's been on Leaving the Ring numerous times, who we followed his careers from the beginning since he was signed with TKO Promotions. Then he's moved on with Golden Boy, and he got his first title 2 weeks ago. So Mike Ruiz, who's fought Randy twice in the amateurs. I believe it's twice. He's going to be calling in, and he's going to want to talk about why he should be getting a shot at Randy Caballero. Repo Rick, who's his management guy, who manages him, was had an exchange of words with Randy's dad, Marcos, after the fight at Fantasy Springs, and I posted it up on Facebook. I think I threw it up on, even on Twitter as well. If you didn't have a chance to check it out, you want to check that out. Man, they look almost like they were going to go into blows. These two guys really don't like each other. I've had a chance to speak to the Caballero camp. They're like, look, it's not up to us. It's up to Cameron Duncan. They would want to make the fight. Mike Ruiz definitely in his camp want to make the fight. So we're going to be waiting for them to call in to talk a little bit about why this fight should happen. We're talking about buildup. You know, funny thing is that me and Gable were talking about this, and I told Gable, hey, check out Mike Ruiz, see what you think. But Gabe brought up a great point. He said, you know, a guy like this, a guy that's coming up, who Golden Boy is having a chance to build, he needs a nemesis. Should it be made right away if Mike Ruiz keeps continuously winning? I don't know, Gabe. What do you think? Should it happen right away? Because this is a guy right now who has a camp. His Repo Rick is one of those hype men that definitely gets you hyped up to want to see it. But should it happen this moment? Should it cook a little bit, simmer up just enough, marinate just enough to be tasteful that the fight fans are going to want to put their fork and knife into it?
You know, I'm not sure. You know, I mean, look at Randy's record. He's 12-0 with 7 knockouts. He's been very busy this year. You know, he's fought, what, 6 times in the last, when he picks up the WBC Youth Intercontinental, title, Super Bantamweight title, against a guy that's 8-0-1, just like Michael Ruiz Jr., who we're talking about. He's 8-0-1 with 3 knockouts.
Hey, Gabe, real quick, I'm going to interrupt just a minute, and we're going to get back to that subject because we got Wallach on the line right now. Hello.
How are you?
Good, brother. Yes, how you doing?
Very good. Thank you.
Hey, man, thank you for taking the time to speak to us. Huge fan here. We were just talking about you a little while ago about how you know, you're a workhorse in the sport. You're a blue-collar fighter. You're a guy that works construction during the day, comes in as a fighter. Overall, you have the marvelous Marvin Hagler stigma around you because you're a guy that comes to fight. There's no glamour about you. You're just a dude that likes to put on the gloves and wants to bang it out with the guy that's in front of you. What made you into that type of fighter?
I have no idea. That's just my style. It's the way I fight. That's how I feel comfortable. And it's been working, so I've been just sticking to it.
Are you surprised in how much the fans have kind of clinged on to you and how they recognize you, though you haven't had a chance to get a title shot? I mean, you almost did. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. was the guy that you were supposed to – you were the replacement for Alfonso Gomez, but he miraculously got the flu or something happened to him where he got the Wallach disease and said, no, I'm not fighting this guy. I'm walking away from it.
Yeah, I'll tell you flat out, I mean, the fans are unbelievable. I love it. You know, they've been so warm to me. Guys are like telling me, a lot of Polish fans, American fans, all kinds of fans, you know, they're telling me, oh, you've been an inspiration. I can't believe you work a regular job and you box. I'm like, wow, I've never been in that kind of situation in my life where people are like so nice. You know, and fans, and they want to talk to you. And believe me, if I ever get a message like on Facebook or through my website, I try to answer it as quickly as I can. And I get a lot of mail. And you know what? It makes me feel so good because I'm like in a dream world. I can't believe that people like care and they're so nice. It's great.
You've been kind of a workhorse guy, but you weren't. You know, I don't mean to denigrate you at all, but they didn't really treat you like an A side. You know, you were supposed to fight Chavez Jr. He's obviously the A side in that fight, but after the Foreman fight, have you noticed a change? I mean, now you're putting in with Delvin Rodriguez. You're the favorite to win. Do you think things have kind of turned and now you're not so much a guy, you know, brought in to give another guy work, but a guy that's a viable contender and that could take anybody in the 154-pound division. Do you feel that the perception's changed now about you?
I think you know, Top Rank, my Porter is getting behind me more and more, which is great. You know, it's a great company, big company, and a lot of fighters, and that's exactly what I was working for. But at the same time, you know, the whole thing that, you know, they didn't look at me as if I could compete as before. In my heart, in my mind, I knew that I could compete with the best guys. But you got to prove yourself. You can't just say, oh, I'm going to be, you know, world champion. You got to fight, man. You know what I mean? You got to prove yourself. And finally, maybe I am proving myself a little bit more and more each fight, and now they're getting behind me, which is the way it should be. It's, you know, I have no complaints.
Yeah.
You know, you definitely sound like a guy that doesn't complain. You definitely sound like a guy that's willing, that wants to work for what's given to him, not just being given, getting it just because of the fact that you have a name. Does that make you more of a fighter because you have to work for it?
Yeah, you got to work. Exactly. I mean, I'm. You know what? Like, it's, you know, they say that people that are born into money, they don't appreciate it, and the people that actually make money with their own sweat in their hands, then they really appreciate it because they know what it took to get it. Well, I feel the same way, man. You got to work for, you know, to get something. You know, if it's given to you, you're not going to appreciate it. It won't mean the same. So, listen, you know, work ethic and actually fighting for what you want and really putting yourself out there to accomplish as much as you can, I mean, it makes it so sweet. That's when it really counts.
How significant to you was the Ishae Smith loss? I mean, obviously losing is a significant thing, but was that a big turning point for you? Because you haven't lost since. It's something like 8-9 fights since then. It was back in 2008. There's been no turning back. You know, some people were picking against you in the Yuri Foreman fight, and you pulled out that. Was that a big moment for you? Did you learn a lot in that fight?
Okay, there you go. See, of course it hurt, believe me. You know, I had a vacation planned right after that fight to Key West. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
Me and my wife, at that time, she was my girlfriend. We went to Key West. So it was a little. It kind of. I'm not gonna lie. It definitely hurt. But at the same time, even though it hurt, I'm glad that it happened because it made me see. You know what? You gotta get better. You gotta change some things. And if you really wanna compete with the best guys, you're really gonna have to learn and buckle down and, you know, really, really fight. So and that's exactly what happened. I'm glad that it happened. I learned so much from that, and then now we're doing very good. So I have no complaints.
Devin Rodriguez is a kid that had a whole lot of hype. Now he's kind of getting himself back into the contingencies. He's got 25 wins, 5 losses, 14 KOs. Is this the biggest challenge for himself, facing yourself, the Raging Bull Wallah? Being on ESPN, after this, do you feel that you belong on ESPN too, or should you move on to HBO or Showtime? What is Top Rank talking about after this win for yourself?
You know what? I haven't really gotten into any of the discussions about what's going to happen after. I mean, you know, look, everything looks very good. I mean, look, Delvin is tough. Look, he's coming to win. I'm not overlooking him. I know it's gonna be a tough fight. So I don't even really want to you know, look forward about potential opponents or, you know, whatever fights, whatever happens in the future. Listen, I gotta look good, and I think that good things will happen, you know, after this fight. I have to win. I have to look good. But I think good things will happen. And I'm just going to take it a step at a time. I'm not saying, listen, I'm enjoying what I do. I'm really satisfied and how we're going, at which pace we're going. You know, I'm learning a lot in the gym. I'm very happy. My boss, my employer, is behind me. He gives me off for camp, for fights. Listen, I'm in a great spot. I got to fight it out, and I think good things will happen.
Is it fair to say, I mean, you got a good ratio of KOs, but those KOs come from a volume of you working to you know, really, yeah. Is it fair to say that every fight for you, it's a tough fight because you know, you have to go after the guy. You're going to have to throw a volume of punches. And the guy's going to have to participate in that. He's going to have to come at you. Isha Smith is an elusive guy. That's why he was able to get away from you. Have you learned from those adjustments? Have you learned from anything from that and said, listen, these are the guys that are going to give me trouble?
Listen, you know, definitely, you know, we definitely talk about which style. Obviously, a boxer, puncher, you know, a kind of a slapper and a guy that, you know, he gets out the way, you know, throws a little combination and gets out the way, doesn't want to engage. Those are going to be the toughest fight for me. Basically, you know, we thought Yuri Foreman, even though Yuri Foreman, when the fight went just as we planned, even better than we planned, you know, but we were worried just because his movement. I knew I was going to get to him, but I didn't know that I was going to get to him so fast. So we definitely work on those kind of styles. And, you know, we practice my pressure, my slipping, my head movement, my cutting off the ring. That's obviously been to work with. I work with great people. Like I said, you know, Tommy Brooks is in my corner. Arrow's Gist, terrific. They call him terrific. A former Ken Holtz trainer. He's in my corner. Darren Antol, my cutman, great cutman. I got my strength conditioning coach, Farrell Brenner. And, you know, the team is really coming together. You know, we're being very efficient in my training. You know, we train for how I fight. We get my body ready, in tip-top condition for the way I fight. You know, so, you know, everything is being, I believe, the right way. You know, the proper rest, the proper training, the hard training, and it's coming along. It's coming along very well. You know, hopefully tomorrow, you know, I'm definitely ready. I had some great sparring. I'm in great shape, and hopefully tomorrow you're going to see more of that.
You mentioned, you know, I got to look good in this fight. You know, besides just winning, you got to look good. When you approach a fight and you actually get in there, are you more concerned about, okay, I got to execute my game plan, these are the things we worked on, these are the things I need to look for, or are you looking at, I need to knock this guy out and graduate to the next level? You know, what is your mindset heading into the fight?
Basically, my mindset for every fight is winning every round, you know, throwing the guy off his rhythm, you know, making him do things that he's not used to. What I mean by that is, you know, I fight, I spar a certain way at a certain pace, and it makes, you know, guys uncomfortable. But, you know, for me, it works in a weird way, in a very chaotic way. You know, it's chaotic in the ring, but it works well for me. So basically, my understanding is, you know, to make him fight in that chaotic kind of setting. So he's thrown off his game. He can't execute what he wants to do, which works for me.
Right.
And then, you know, I mean, I don't know if I can all kind of explain it. It's this kind of thing that works for me. I put it this way. I like to put people, I like to take people into my world, like not my world, but into what I'm used to. And obviously, if I do that, I'm taking them out of what they're used to.
Exactly.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, that makes total sense. You know, you're fine operating in that chaos. And the other guy, you know, like particularly Foreman, he's a very controlled fighter. He likes to control distance, and he wants to move, and he wants it to be a very calm boxing match. And you made that fight anything but that. You know, you absolutely disrupted him. It makes a lot of sense to me. I'm just always curious, you know, because you're on the kind of a precipice right now of being able to graduate to your own, you know, maybe an HBO Boxing After Dark show or getting on Showtime. And, you know, is that in your mind of, you know, this is also entertainment beyond being a sport, and do you want to be entertaining? You usually are, you know, I'm always entertained by you, but I'm always just curious, you know, how much can that really play into your game plan, you know, or do you just throw that out the window and get in there?
Yeah, and the funny thing too, Gabe, is that he's always been under the radar, I'm a hardcore fight fan, though. When I see his name come up, I go, oh, this is going to be a good fight. Because we know that Wallach comes to fight here. You know, really, really quick, I want to ask you a name, and then you tell me what you think that fight, what the outcome or how it would play out to be. Alfredo Angulo versus you, how would it play out?
I think it would be a very tough fight. You know, we would collide. We would just collide. You see what I mean? Basically a battle of, you know, attrition. Who's got more? Who can absorb more? Who can deal with the person's onslaught better, I guess. It'd be a very tough, bloody fight. Put it that way.
Edison, Irislandi Lara.
You know, I don't really watch much of him, but he's a big tactician. He's got a lot of amateur background. He's a lefty. You know, same thing with him. I don't know what happened, but I was trying to throw him off his rhythm. I think if I really started going at him chaotic, maybe I would throw him off his game plan, and maybe he wouldn't be able to execute what he does best.
Now the last one is, who do you think the flu will attack first, Chavez or Canelo?
I'm sorry, say it again. Say it again. I'm sorry.
Who would the flu attack first if they had to face you? Chavez or Canelo?
Chavez. It already attacked him once.
He's susceptible. Yeah, he needs to get a vaccine.
Yeah.
Do you think that fight's, is that a possibility for you, do you think? I know you're not looking past Devin Rodriguez, but do you think the window closed for that? No?
No, I don't think the window's closed, but look, I'm not looking past Devin. I think Devin's going to be a tough fight. But
absolutely,
always a possibility. Of course, in the future, I mean, anything can happen.
Right. All you got to do is just keep winning, like you said. Keep winning and looking good.
Exactly.
Give him the flu shot. Give him the flu shot, brother, so he doesn't catch it again. Brother. Hey, thank you again, man, for taking the time. I know you're stuck in traffic. Much appreciative of you to come on and speak to us here on Leaving the Ring, brother. Thank you again. I hope to have you on again.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
And good luck on your fight, man. Good luck on your fight. We'll definitely be watching.
Great. Have a good
one. You too. Take care. He's a cool guy.
Oh, man, yeah. Yeah, you know, really matches his personality, which is a good guy. Like right now I have one email saying, like, they don't like him and this and this and that. And it's the whole reason is because of Julio Cesar Chavez. I like him. He comes to fight. You know, there's no ifs and ands about him. He's a fighter. He's a prize fighter. And that's what prize fighters are supposed to do. You present the opponent. You present the purse. And they say, okay. And there's no black and white about it. That's their job. And that's definitely what Wallach does. He comes out and he comes to fight. Fight fans, if you want to call in and speak to us here on Leaving the Ring, you sure can. 347-215-7598. You want to talk about this interview. If you missed the interview, you can always catch it on the archive a little later after the show on leavingtheRing.com. If you want to send us some email, you can at leavingtheRing@gmail.com for the mailbag. I know we've been slipping a little bit. We're always slipping here on Leaving the Ring, man. Unfortunately, always up to something, and we're doing this and we're doing that. Gabe's been all over the place this past 2 weeks. I was all over the place. I had a chance to sit down with Robert the Ghost Guerrero. I had a chance to video and interview Madonna, but I haven't even put up the video. Something's going on with my video. I'm getting the picture, but I'm not getting the audio. So I'm trying to fix that so I can put it up on YouTube and put it up on the site so people could check that out. I did have a great conversation with Eric, and the same thing. The audio is not coming through. Eric Gomez from Golden Boy, the matchmaker, which we had a good conversation. He had told me it took 2 weeks of convincing for Madonna to face Robert the Ghost Guerrero. He said it. Well, the reason was because Chino was like, hey, in his backyard, he's a southpaw. The guy comes to fight. He could be elusive. He could become a banger. There were some things there in between to really think about whether or not he should come down San Jose HP. But you know what? Chino was all balls. He said, yo, let's do it. Let's make it happen. So we're going to have a great fight happen between these two warriors in the month of August. Gabe, any luck with Kid Chocolate? We're having Mike Ruiz call in about 6:30. So if not, let's take some other fight fans that have been waiting patiently on hold for Leaving the Ring to talk some boxing here with us.
Let's take some calls. I'll text him and just see if I can get him.
All right, let's just patch in Rob Regal, who wants to talk to us here on Leaving the Ring about networks. What's up, brother? You're on live right now. What's on your mind?
going on, and thank God for that Brandon Rios fight. I mean, we've been having a good year. You had the Klitschko letdown, and then now you had the robbery. I mean, it's I'm not even breaking down that fight. It was just, that's just boxing to me. You know what I mean? I'm not, when I talk to people about it, I'm not dissecting it or nothing. But I'm just wondering what's up with the networks. It seems like HBO's slipping, and it's kind of bad because, I mean, I really like their production value. I like the commentary, but I mean, ESPN fights are doing well. Showtime's doing well. They're the ones that turned down Brandon Rios. Is there gonna be some kind of power shift here pretty soon? I mean, y'all hear a lot of stuff. I know y'all hear a lot of stuff because I really don't like Showtime. They're getting better, you know what I mean? But Gus Johnson, that guy just gets to me, you know what I mean? But their production value's getting better. But HBO is just, man, it's just, they're just letting me down. I mean, what do y'all think on that? I mean, with the power shift, I guess, because even ESPN fights. I mean, I'd rather watch that before HBO now.
You know, Showtime, I got to tell you this. I've liked Showtime a lot better since 2005 when they showed Diego Corrales against Jose Luis Castillo. Showtime, to me, in my opinion, are the Fight Fan Network. You know, Ken Hirschman understands what fight fans want to see, understands the sport a lot more than what the other guys are doing on HBO. HBO, to me, they're just trying to be a promoter. They're not trying to be a network at all. They you know, they're looking at other things rather than the value of what the subscribers are looking for and what they want. HBO has been slipping for the last, four years. They need to get rid of the executives that are controlling the system, or just get rid of the whole boxing department, in my opinion, because Showtime is definitely giving us the time, and it would make other networks step up to the plate and give us better fights. Gabe?
I wouldn't get rid of the program, but I would just start at the top, and not the very top, but I've said it before, I've said it on Twitter, and I'm not afraid to say it out yet again. Ross and Kerry need to be fired. They've run the company into the ground. That brand of boxing over the last 10 years, they overpay, they overbid against, or they outbid themselves for fights. I mean, most people don't realize, I mean, maybe they do because everybody, all the information's out there on Twitter these days with all the boxing writers. But, you know, Paul Williams made like $1.2 million for that fight. And Arisandy Lara made $135,000 for that fight, somewhere in there. That's where the numbers are rumored to be. HBO paid $2 million for that Williams-Lara card, while Showtime paid $650,000 for Rios versus Antion. To me, it's just that overspending. What it leads to is in the fourth quarter of the year, HBO is now over budget. They're out of budget. And so what we're going to get is Dawson Hopkins on pay-per-view because the promoter pays for that, and that's what we're forced to go to. To me, it's just these guys have been, to use a political term, fiscally irresponsible for far too long. They've shown favoritism to Al Haymon's fighters way too much. In a sense of not just getting them on network so much, but overpaying them. When you look at the way other guys get paid versus Al, and hey, if I was a fighter, I'd be with Al Haymon. I'd want to get that paycheck for fighting guys like Freddie Hernandez. That'd be great. But, you know, looking at the way the network is, that's where you really lay the blame. Why are they treating him that way? I don't understand it. To me, I would fire Ross Greenberg and Kerry Davis. I would bring in somebody that's very experienced in the boxing industry, that knows many different camps and parties and is not really aligned with any one of them. And I would begin again. Because, Showtime's kicking their ass right now on many levels.
Many.
Yeah, I mean, I see all this, you know, with all the crooked stuff going on, and it looks really shady. I think, you know, I don't really blame Paul Williams. I tell you, don't be bad at Paul Williams. You know, it's just, you know, he's just a fighter. You know, it's the enablers. You know, even Al Haymon,
exactly.
You know, everybody hates the guy, but I mean, these guys got such a grip on these guys. You know, giving Paul, overpaying him, and giving the fighters like Sergio Martinez the runarounds, shooting down Brandon Rios. Now look at him, he's on fire. You know, like guys like. Yeah, good, you know, good solid guys, working like guys, like guys that remind me of Glenn Johnson, like Warlock and Molina, that, you know, put on a good show on the undercard. You know, it's just they got to go with the. I think they're trying to go with too much flash and what's commercial, what looks good. You know, what can be on what looks good on a commercial. You need to go get back to down to that working like American way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like back in the day when boxing was good, when you know when we were in depression. You know, that's when we had the toughest people on the planet when America was kind of like, you know, we're struggling. And then now it's just everybody just wants the easy way out, you know. And it's just, I think that's why a lot of that, I mean, it stems a lot of problems. Like you guys said, we're talking about boxing technique. Everybody wants to, you know, is throwing away all the, you know, it's just like, and all the
throwing away the
like
fundamental.
Basketball.
Exactly. Everything's getting watered down.
Yeah.
That's why these Europeans and everybody else is coming over.
You mentioned that. It is important to really reiterate that, you know, there's a lot of criticism about Al Haymon, and I think it's people misinterpret it. We're not criticizing Al Haymon. He's doing his job as representation
right.
for these fighters. I mean, there's certain things that I won't even get into because it's periphery to this that I question in his the way he does his business, but that's beside the point. Because if you look at the Showtime card, like the HBO card was kind of a Haymon top-to-bottom card. You had Areola, you had Rico Ramos, who's also with Haymon, and you had Paul Williams, who's with Haymon. But if you look at the Showtime card and you were there live, like I was, many of those fighters were Cameron Duncan-managed fighters. You don't hear any criticism over there, but that's probably because you've never seen HBO go up to the middleweight champion or any champion on Cameron Duncan's behalf and ask for a catch weight and all the sponsorship money and a higher percentage of the purse, even though their guy is the challenger, and have HBO say either you take this deal or you're not fighting on our network. That's the things that need to be stopped. That's why Kerry Davis needs to be let go, as well as Ross Greenberg, because they let little alliances like that, you know, take over their business. It's just a fresh start. I mean, if you screw up for this long, and there are people that will say, well, you know, show me empirical evidence that these guys
and let's clarify that. But Gabe,
last 10 years of HBO.
Yeah, but you got to also clarify that. Okay, Al Haymon. This is the reason why Al Haymon has so much. He's able to, you know, strong arm HBO because he brings not just fighters, but he brings, you know, entertainers from Beyonce. You know, you want a concert
right.
with Beyonce? You know, this is that. Not necessarily saying that Al Haymon said this, but this may be the reason why HBO is bending over numerous times to Al Haymon because they're afraid to upset this guy. HBO just got to grow a pair, and they got to really say, listen, are we a network or are we trying to be promoters? They can't be both. You can't do both things. HBO was a lot more entertaining and a lot more valued by fight fans when they were just solely a network and they were giving us good fights. That's
right.
It. Just like Jim
they
Lampley.
They come up with their own belt the way they ask
right.
these days.
Right. And just like Jim Lampley I used to like Jim Lampley a lot prior when he understood. When he was a guy that would, you know, openly say, I don't know shit about boxing. I'm not going to act like it, but I'm surrounded by guys. I'm a journalist. Now, the guy thinks he knows everything when he starts making comparisons to eras of back in the 40s to now. Dude, just because you've been on and you watch the fight, you don't want to bother to even look into the sport because you call fights, you think you're an expert. That's what I think is ridiculous about HBO at the moment.
It really is. There's a lot of issues there with HBO. And you're right, Dave. You know, I haven't confirmed it, but I've heard that rumor for a long time that basically Al will kind of lure HBO with a musical act, or if you really look, and there's one study I'm doing right now, kind of looking into, you know, a lot of his fighters kind of fight in out-of-the-way arenas. You know, like, you look at Fernando Guerrero, and, like, why is he fighting in, like, you know, Mississippi or some random place in Texas where he's from, like, you know, Baltimore. And then you look a few weeks later or a few weeks before, and you see, like, a major music act playing in the middle of nowhere in this arena. And I've heard rumors that it's kind of a tit-for-tat kind of thing. You put my fighter there, give me a nice site fee for this guy, and I'll bring you X act. You know, I'm saying that's a rumor, you know, but that's what I've heard from a couple different places.
Yeah, I mean, who do you think is going to get the, go ahead.
That's okay. Go ahead,
I was going to say, who, I mean, from a fan's perspective, it seems like they kind of back themselves in the corner, especially with Top Rank. Y'all here through the grapevine. Who do you think is going to get that fight? I mean, there's two big fights coming up with the Pacquiao Marquez and the Cotto Margarito rematch. I mean, I think those are going to do really well. And I guess, like, I've seen articles where they're still not sure who they're going to go with.
For me, I'm trying not to make picks so far out. I don't know how.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me about that today, Cotto Margarito, and I, I kind of got stuck. I was like, I don't really know. It depends on what each guy's got left. You know, Cotto seems to have found a way to box and move that makes him so he doesn't get so tired towards the end of the fight. Margarito just took a hellacious beating and may not have full sight yet in his eye. I'm not sure. I kind of tend to lean towards Cotto in that situation.
I meant the networks. I'm sorry. Whether they're going to be HBO or Showtime.
Right now, I thought there was going to be an announcement earlier this week, and it hasn't come yet. So I think they're still looking over the numbers. It's hard to tell. I think Bob is enjoying this leverage while he's got it. Between the two networks, you might as well draw it out. So I'm not really sure where they're going to go. Wherever they go, those aren't really even significant fights. I know people will say that's kind of odd to say, but they'll do great numbers.
I agree. I'm just saying, as far as a show, for a casual guy, I'd rather, Margarito, I kind of like that more than Pacquiao. I think Pacquiao, he's got too much of an advantage over Marquez, but I'm just confused about the thing. It's just the politics of it all. I don't understand it. I just read what I read, and I don't know. Y'all know a little bit more. I was just wondering what y'all's take on that was.
If they put that fight, Cotto Margarito, in Madison Square Garden, I might make that my first Garden fight, because that's going to be electric. All those Puerto Ricans pissed off at Margarito, wanting to get their revenge on, that's going to be awesome.
That's going to be pretty hostile, bro.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'll put on my little Tito headband and try to be undercover. Maybe get my hair processed. Who knows? Try to get like a little Puerto Rican fro going on. But I was at the first one, so I kind of want to bookend it, and that's why I'm going to probably going to the Marquez Pacquiao 3, just because I was there at the second one, and I kind of want to be there for this to finish it out. I think that's right, a mismatch at this point. Yeah.
Rob, I'm going to put you on hold, okay? Because we got a couple of the calls, we got a couple of the subjects we had to talk about. Don't hang up, okay? Just going to put you on hold.
Thank you for the call, man.
All right, no problem.
Speaking about Juanma Marquez, he's going to be fighting in Cancun this Saturday. It's going to be streamed by Top Rank Promotions. He's doing a tune-up fight for his preparation for Manny Pacquiao, who's going to be facing in November.
okay.
I don't know. I really don't even know what to think about it. The funny thing is that I got to be honest with you. I'm not very pumped up about the Marquez-Pacquiao trilogy here between these two guys.
Not really, no.
I'm not excited about it at all. This is a fight that's just overdue. Should have happened a couple years back. Now it's happening, but there's stipulation. I don't know. You can call me a Manny Pacquiao hater. I don't care what you call me, because I get it every day. Every day I get it from people and stuff. You just hate Manny. You can't stand to see an Asian guy move up. I don't care. I'm just completely turned off by Manny Pacquiao right now at this moment. I have been for the last couple of his fights. I don't see him as a fighter anymore. I see him more as an entertainer, a guy that's just going to take what he can, because his fans are just that foolish to pay for it,
I always just ask fans now, when they say you hate Manny, I say, well, you love Manny. And what's creepier, you love him so another man that you don't even know so much that you're upset about my opinion. Which one of us is the freak? I think that'd be you.
The thing is that, like yourself too, Gabe, you've met Manny. He's not a bad, he's a good guy,
He's cool to me.
Yeah, he's a, really cool person and stuff. The whole camp, from Freddie Rhodes, Alex Ariza, all of them, really good
very
people.
Very friendly.
Very friendly. They're always willing to talk to people. Freddie Rhodes has been a little bit more grumpier. And the reason is because you get so much criticism and people just taking jabs at him. Yeah, that makes you a little bitter. Pisses you off.
His pace has really grown, too. Yeah. That guy, you watch him in the gym, and he doesn't really stop moving. And people are always pulling at him. And, Freddie, come talk to this and do this. And dude, I'd be grumpy, too.
Yeah, it's just a nonstop thing for the guy, where in the beginning he was very excited, the attention was there, he was like, hey, what's up, and blah, blah, blah. One thing about Freddie, once he sees your face and he knows that you know boxing, he doesn't forget it. But when you look at what they've been doing, of course there's got to be criticism, or else we would, there was, there'd be no reason to have a radio show, you know, to talk about these particular things that are out there. But going back with Juan Marquez, and I haven't even tried, but I'd like to get Nacho Bernstein on the show just to talk to him a little bit about how their preparation is doing, how they're working at gaining weight to make the weight to fight Manny. But I got to go back again. I'm not excited. Fight fans, if you're excited about this fight, which I haven't really heard a whole lot of people being excited about it, give us a ring at 347-215-7598 and let us know. Explain to us, why should we be excited about another Manny Pacquiao where he's going to be, his odds are going to be all for him and nothing for Marquez again? I mean, when's the last time you've seen him beat an equal or underdog fight? That's the thing, too, that cracks me up, is that you have these Manny fans that treat this almost like a religion, and they go like, well, you know, this is the reason why, because Marquez talks so much crap. Or the reason is because Mayweather won't fight him. Okay, that's cool, I get that, but you're telling me there's nobody else out there that he could have faced? Like, you know, maybe a more of a challenge? I don't know. I mean, hey, is it a good fight? I think it's going to be an okay fight for however long it lasts. But is it a fight that you're really excited about, where you're thinking that there's a possibility that he's going to be knocked out or beaten? I don't think so. Gabe?
No, it's not. You know, it just doesn't, like you said, it's past the expiration date, you know. And it's past the expiration weight. You know, the Marquez is not, he has not shown, you know, in that one fight that he is capable of fighting above 135 pounds effectively. And Manny has shown that, you know, and as skewed as the fights have been, or, you know, weight stipulations or this and that and the other thing, guys at the end of their career, he still, you know, looks pretty viable, much more vibrant above that weight than Marquez does. And maybe it comes down to styles, I don't know. Maybe Marquez is always going to be a little bit smarter and a little bit more skilled than Manny. I tend to think he gets blown out. Like it's even for a little bit, and then it just goes into overdrive. A lot, like a lot of Manny's fights early on, they're kind of tight, and then he just kind of pulls away. I don't think this is going to be any different. You know, and people will buy it, and they will go crazy. And what's sad about it is that as close and competitive and great as those first two fights are, this for at least the Manny fans, will define the trilogy. See, he was better all along. And it really, you know, honestly, this is about as meaningful as, I don't know, you know, Duran and Leonard the third time. Or, you know, it may be not as meaningless as that, but it doesn't mean as much. It just really, the luster is off this fight. And you're right, dude. You know, I understand Bob's argument, and you got to build up the B-side and bring something to the table in order for me to fight with my guy. I get it, but that doesn't mean I don't have to be tired of the act. And I'm tired of it. I'm really tired of Manny. Floyd saved himself with me in that he's taking on Ortiz, and I'm kind of intrigued by the fight. I'm very intrigued by the fight, and I'm going to go to the fight. But with Manny, the act is tired. Until you fight somebody worthwhile that is kind of prime and natural to a weight class, I'm just not really that into it. I'm probably going to go for historical reasons and nothing else, you know, just to kind of close it out.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I ain't going to lie to you. I'm going to watch the fight. But am I going to sit there? Am I going to sit there and go like, oh no, this is a big chance that Marquez can redeem himself? And no, not really. I think Marquez is going to have his moments. I think Marquez is going to bring what his capabilities are now because of his age. His legs have shown right now that they're not the same anymore. Other than that, I don't know what else can be said. I mean, you know, can we judge Manny off of his Mosley fight? Yeah, you can. You could see that there's been some declining in his part, but at the same time, how much decline does Marquez have coming into this fight? You know, and I know some fight fans want to talk about Mir Khan versus Zab Judah, which they had a press conference call just this past Tuesday. We definitely got to talk a little bit about that. Mike Reeves was supposed to call him, trying to find out what's going on with him right now, to find out if he's going to be calling in to speak to us. You know, he's supposed to be making his case.
Him and Kid Chocolate
fight.
Or Randy Caballero. Both of them. Both of them are fired.
But going with Marquez and Pacquiao. Look, I'm not dumping on the fight. Is it going to be entertaining? Yes, it is. But is it pay-per-view worthy? No. What Manny fans? What Manny fights have been so far? And since God, I don't know, what last fight would you really want to pay for pay-per-view to watch it? I think the Cotto fight. I think that was kind of worthy. But I was picking
Oscar.
Manny to win that fight. Oscar, you know,
I'd actually pay money to watch that replay right now. You know, I never get tired of that fight. But then,
yeah.
You know, I was never the biggest Oscar fan.
I wouldn't pay for that fight again. I'd pay for the Marquez 2 fight again, but not for the Marquez 3.
Oh,
I think
without,
that fight is,
without question.
You know, when you talk about competition, that was great. You know, the thing, too, though, is that, like I said, look, you get Manny fans that really kind of got into the sport. There's a particular name for Manny fans and particular name for the Mayweather fans. I don't use that term because it's not fair. You know what I'm saying? You know, I mean, why start a conversation with an insult? You're not going to get anything out of it except for continuous insults. But I do say this. The credibility that you got to give Manny Pacquiao is that he did fight Morales, which was that was the last of his prime, okay, was their first fight. And he gave Morales a hell of a fight. He fought a prime Marquez who Barrera and Morales didn't want to fight at the time.
Exactly. You gotta give him that. Yeah.
You gotta give him that. That was history. I mean, this is a guy that really, if you look at his career, this is a guy that was never sugarcoated. You know, he fought through the rankings the right way, the hard way, the traditional way, which was there was no glamoring factor about him. He didn't go to the Olympics. He picked up the sport out of the slums, and he made a name for himself. You know, now, is he taking advantage of all the perks of making it to the top? Of course, man. I mean, yeah. But do we have to like it? No. Mm-mm. You know, it's always that one thing that, you know, when you're trying to come up, you do everything right, and then when you finally make it on top, you know, you try to do everything to keep you on top. And that's what Manny's doing. And if you call that hating, I guess that's what we're doing, is we're hating on the guy. But at the same time, you got to glorify him for what he has done, his accomplishments of what he's done in the past to get himself to that top. But it doesn't necessarily say we have to keep praising him and not recognize and be blind to the fact that he is picking easier fights that are available to him. You know, I know there's some people that will sit there and go, well, he did this, he did that, he did this. Okay, but does it have to stop there? I mean, he is still lacing up the gloves, right, Gabe?
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, these guys reach a point, though. You know, I think we talked about it a few months back, and I was just like, I find it kind of liberating when you just stop caring about Manny Pacquiao fighting somebody fresh. You know, he's reached a point. It's sort of like Joe Calzaghe, you know, wanting him to come over here at a certain point. You just got to realize they're making so much money, they're never going to do it the way we want them to do it. And so you just kind of go, well, all right, you're in your own league. I'll just kind of brush you to the side. I don't really care about you until you fight somebody worthwhile. And you move on to the guys that are, you know. That's kind of what I do. You know, that's a lot of what you do. We both of us are pretty hardcore guys. We watch everything. We watch every fight. And that's the only thing that kind of not keeps me going. It makes me sound like I'm suicidal, but what makes me still care about the sport.
I don't know about that. There's been weeks where there's no fights, and you called me telling me you're on the edge of the cliff, you're ready to jump off your apartment building, and I've told you, dude, just restream this fight, Gabe. Take it easy. Take a deep breath. You're like, okay.
Yeah, go to sweetboxing.com and then download something. You'll be fine, you know.
But, take a shot at Salvador Sanchez. You'll be all right.
Exactly. But you worry about Floyd, and that's what's funny. You know, this whole USADA and WADA thing that came out. You know, Bob Arum, we want, you know, a neutral governing body, and which isn't even, you know, I'm writing something on it, so it,
didn't want to really get into the whole complicated thing about USADA and WADA, but really, are we really going to go crazy about that storyline and delve into that? Now Bob wants this, and they've agreed to that. When they're fighting, call me. Let me know, and then I'll be there. I'll show
like
up to the press conference. Yeah, until then, it does. Until then, I just don't care what you've agreed to in a fight that's not even being negotiated. People just buy it, hook, line, and sinker, and they go back to defend the Floyd camp or defend the Manny camp. And, God, it's just endless, mindless bullshit. There's so many other good fighters to be talking about, like Paul Wolak and Delvin Rodriguez. That's a good, solid fight. People waste so much time arguing about these two jokers who won't even get in the ring with each other. You know, much less on Manny's side, he's not getting in the ring with anybody fresh. And Floyd, now he is, but it's been years. You know, to me, it can't always be the Super Bowl, and you can't always look at the top of the sport. You got to love the sport from bottom to top. You know, and that stuff just gets so old. Like, Floyd was kind of berating
us. It's a marriage. It's a marriage in so many ways. Boxing and yourself has got to be a marriage. You know, you got to work out the kinks, the up and downs, the roller coaster. It is what it is. You're going to love it and you're going to hate it. I got such a love and hate relationship with boxing. It's ridiculous. I get burnt out sometimes where I got to walk away from it for about a week. I mean, we've done that, you know, from covering this sport where it's hard to defend. But at the same time, there's always one fight that brings it all back to level, you know? It brings it back to the high grounds. It brings it back where you say, this is why we watch the sport of boxing, you know? Now, if you're a casual fan, of course you're going to leave those comments like, well, the only thing that's keeping boxing together is the fact that the possibility of Pacquiao versus Mayweather. Well, you know what? You know what's funny is that you're an MMA fan. I'm not. I'm a boxing fan, and I can seriously sit here and tell you, I don't know what fight would be to that magnitude in MMA. You know what I'm saying? Well, you're not a boxing fan, but you seem to know more of our sport. You know the two names that are big out there that everybody wants to watch, the whole world. But yeah, I can't fathom two names of your guys' sport. Where I could seriously sit and go, dude, this fight, this would be a great fight. Can't find that. So whose sport is dying? Not my sport. There's plenty of names out there.
I don't understand that when people say, well, when Manny and Floyd are gone, you guys are done. I think that's just not reality. You're just acting like they're going to disappear off the planet. One, it's going to take a few years. Two, you know, like that top-ranked show last week, like the Golden Boy show coming up next week, there's a lot of young talent out there. And there's always somebody, you know, it's like in any field, there's always going to be more. No, there's not going to be another heavyweight guy, you know, that anybody can recognize. It ain't Deontay Wilder. It might be Chris Areola if the Klitschkos retire and we get all these kind of smaller guys fighting each other. But this sky is falling mentality about boxing, particularly from ignorant MMA fans that try to tell me about my sport. I'm just not buying it. That just shows that you don't know shit about my sport. That's how I look at it.
Absolutely. Hey, you know what, producer David Chan, you want to check who's been on hold? There's a couple of guys on there, and I think one of them may be our guests that have been on hold waiting for us. So, Dave, please check that out. If not, I'll check out to see the 925, Dave. Check that one out. I believe that might be one of our guests. They're on hold.
He's from Fresno, right? This Mr. Ruiz.
Yes. And because I've been texting.
What's that?
No, what were you going to say? I heard you say.
Oh, I'm watching him right now.
I thought you were rapping.
I was. I'm actually watching him right now on. I didn't realize he's a Goodson Tudor fighter.
No?
Yeah, he's. Well, I didn't realize that. I'm watching his win over Jose Luis Matas back in April of last year. That would be a good fight with Randy.
I know it would. I told you to check him out, and hopefully he calls. He texts me right now, and let me see. He's texting me right now. Let me see what he has to say. You know what? Let's call him in. Let's call him in, and because they're saying they're calling in. They're not having much luck and getting through. So
maybe people are jamming the phone lines.
Yeah, you know what? We are getting a lot of calls today. Let's see. Add a conference call. Let's call them on in. And let's see if we can talk some boxing here. Oh, wait a minute. There he is.
Please record your message. When you have finished recording, you...
You know what? There he is right there. Hey, Mike, we got you on the line, brother?
Yes, this is me.
Hey, what's up, man? I was calling you right now on the show. Hey, welcome to Leaving the Ring. So let's talk about this because you know what? I got to tell you that Repo Rick, I don't know if he's on the line with you.
I'm on the line, baby. I'm on the line.
What's up, Rico? How you doing,
what's
man?
Up, baby? Hey, that's right. Team Reef, baby. You know who this is. Team Reef.
You know, Repo is a guy that a lot of people hire because he gets you the fights because of his personality. Some people like it. Some people don't. Me, I'm one of those guys that like Repo Rick. I mean, he excites me. He makes me want to, you know, stand up. And I'm always double-fisted whenever I see Repo Rick and all that. I think even Repo asked me if I was an alcoholic when he met me for the first time. And I said, yeah, why? You got a problem with it, buddy? Anyways, hey, Mike Ruiz here. You're making a case for yourself against Randy Caballero. Your hype man had words with Marcos Caballero. Tell me a little bit, where is this stemming from? Is there animosity? Is this a grudge match? Because I've talked to the Caballero camp, and they say, look, we beat him in the amateurs. What difference is it happens in the pros?
Okay, Repo, you know, when he said it wasn't a grudge match because he didn't know about the fight that happened in the amateurs, he did it because he's seen something in Caballero's fight. He's seen that he was kind of disappointed that he got the fight, but after an eight-round fight, and he wasn't really impressed. So Repo was talking. And also with me, this is, you know, that was amateurs, this is pros. If you want to base on amateurs, okay, you can base on amateurs. You want to base on beat me on my first time at going to Nationals, I only had 13 amateur fights. He had at least over 200, his pops was telling me. And so if you want to base it on that, then base it on that. This is pros, 8-ounce gloves, no headgear, let's do it.
Now, Rick, Repo Rick, what was it that you saw? What did you see out of Randy Caballero off his performance at the Fantasy Springs with his first title he gained? What was it about that fight there that you said, hey, listen, my guy, Mike Ruiz, he could do something here. He could take advantage of this kid.
Well, I'm sitting in the audience for the first time in my life. You know, I can't sit still. I'm very hyper. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching a fight. And I'm watching this kid fight this kid, and the kid was more aggressive than Randy. The kid threw way more punches than Randy, and they giving the fight to Randy. And I'm saying, wait a minute, this kid is Mike Reese. Wait, I didn't know Mike Reese fought this kid. I didn't know if Mike Reese knew the kid. But I'm looking at this, and then I talked to Mike Reese's uncle. He was at the show, and he said, if Mike can beat this kid, we got something. I said, well, man, he's a bomb. That kid was nothing. I mean, he just lost the fight, and they gave it to him. I mean, if he wasn't throwing no punches, and he was just sitting there relaxed, and I don't know what he was doing. But, I mean, if you're going to sit there and fight 11 bombs and knock 11 bombs out, come on, man, let's fight somebody real. Let's take it where it's supposed to be, baby. Okay? Either you can hate me or you can love me because this is Repo Rick. But I'm talking for Team Reese, baby, and Team Reese ready to bring it on. It's just that simple. He ready to bring it to Randy. Randy talked trash, and Randy definitely said he will sign the contract. It's on YouTube. I will sign the contract. Okay, well,
right.
If you're going to sign the contract, Randy, sign it. Let's go.
Right, absolutely. Now, though, their case is, look, they'll sign the contract, but it kind of boils down to Cameron Duncan. So have you went to the source and making this fight happen here between these two guys?
Well, I don't know. Cameron Duncan, if he's scared, he might want to go to church, because I definitely go to church, you know. And this ain't no Tiger Woods show. This is boxing. So, you know, Cameron Duncan need to put it up or shut it up, you know. And he know what boxing all about, but he might be trying to hold a kid up because he thinking this kid going to make him some money in the future. So he might be holding a kid out. He want to fight some tin cans or some donkeys, some jackasses. I don't know.
But this is Team Reese,
this kid out of Fresno. They say nobody in Fresno. Well, Team Reese is sitting right here waiting on you.
What are you saying, Gabe? Yeah, I'm listening.
I'm hearing you, and I'm watching you fight right now, Mike, on YouTube. You're a very nice fighter. You know, you seem to have really nice skills, really understand who you are as a fighter, especially for somebody so young. But, you know, Randy brings a pretty big following. They seem to be developing a star down there, or at least a guy that draws tickets or sells tickets.
Why do you think this fight needs to happen so soon? You both are undefeated. Why now? He doesn't really have a world title. He's got a regional title, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Let me answer that question. You're making a lot of sense. It's not time for really Mike to fight the kid, but I just walked in the back room and I just said, hey, won't one day you fight Mike? But they took it to the next level, so since they took it to the next level, you know how I am, we can get it on now. But you're right, it don't make sense to fight now. It can be a good money fight later.
Well, walk us through that there, Repo. I mean, because what we caught on video, it was kind of in the midst of what was happening. Marcos was yelling back at you. You guys were exchanging words. It was really, really difficult to kind of hear out both what you guys were saying. Tell us what happened here. You were going in the back. They had just been done performing and winning their title. What happened?
I was looking for a restroom, and they said go in the back. So I went in the back, and as I was going in the back, I saw Randy sitting there, and I said, hey, what's up, man? One day you need to fight Mike. And soon I said that, everything just triggered off, and you know me, I'm so hyper, I jumped right back on them. So when they dumped at me, okay, well, let's do it right now then.
You were going to the restroom. Just to clarify, you were looking for the restroom, didn't find it, so you decided to piss on the Caballeros team's parade.
I pissed on their tombstone. That's what I did. Rest in peace. You know, I pissed on their tombstone. Rest in peace. Yes, I did.
Now, Mike, when you hear this from Repo here, what is your? I mean, were you all for that, man? I mean, when you hear what happens after, because you weren't there, right?
No, I wasn't there.
So when you hear the aftermath of what went on between the Caballero camp and your camp, where does that hold you at? I mean, was this a fight that you were particularly looking at getting involved in from the beginning, or is this something that just sparked up and you say, hey, listen, the flame's already starting to get lit. I might as well finish off and get in it even higher.
Well, of course. I mean, look at this Repo. He is Team Reese. He's part of Team Reese. So whatever he does, I have his back all the way. And when he sees something in me, what I can do personally as a fighter, and if he knows I give it my all, if he knows that I do everything I'm supposed to do, he knows I'm gonna come out with a victory. And he's seen something. Because Repo, he acts a fool, but he's not no fool. And also, this is a fight I've been looking for. It didn't matter if it was with him or with anybody. You know, I'm always ready. I just want to showcase myself and show my skills. And I fought everywhere. I fought at Oakland twice. I fought under Andre Ward. I fought under Paul Williams. I fought in L.A. I fought in Reno. I don't stay at home.
He's stuck in one spot.
And so this is what I do, and I'm a fighter. And I want to fight. I want to get better. I don't want to show people my skills. And this is what I'm here for.
Now, to be fair, I've seen you fight live numerous times in Reno, under the Andre Ward card. You know, I'm familiar with you. Now, the thing that though concerns me is that you got two fighters here that are undefeated, like Gabriel was mentioning. The timing. I mean, obviously, right now, by hearing both you guys, and the reason why Randy, they wanted to be on, but Randy got pink eye and he's very ill right now. He's at the hospital. But they wanted to come on, but they were very adamant. They do want this fight. They really do want this fight. They took it very personal when Repo Rick did confront them, and they had the exchange of words. Now, for Mike Ruiz, though, has this become personal the way it's become personal with the Caballero camp?
To me, I mean, they can put it as personal as they want. It doesn't. To me, personal, I just train. And when I go in the ring and I fight, then it's personal, no matter what, because, you know, and there's – you don't show no respect to nobody. So no matter who they put me in the ring with, you know, to them they can take it personal, they can take it whatever they want. For me, it's just another fight and show me who I want to be in the future.
Were you impressed about his performance on Saturday night?
Was I impressed?
Yeah.
I didn't really think that he could have won the fight. You know, if it was his birthday, they would have gave him more of a, you know, a judging call, but they did, you know. So I wasn't really kind of impressed personally. You know, I didn't think he won it. No, he's a good fighter now, but I don't think he had it. And he didn't show what he's supposed to show to actually win a belt like that. So that's all I've seen.
Gabe?
I just watched the fight. I kind of disagree. I thought Randy won very clearly. But these belts are, you know, it's a WBC Youth Intercontinental belt. I mean, it's nice, like Randy said, it's a nice place to mark, this is where I'm at 12 wins, and at a certain point, a certain value. But I wouldn't even make that big. Personally, I don't make that big of a deal out of these belts, but I'm also not a fighter, you know, and you guys work your ass off and spend your whole life trying to get to these, so I won't denigrate them further. But looking at your record right now and just watching this fight, you know, you got three knockouts, but they've happened in the kind of the last year. It's kind of deeper into your career. Are you starting to make that transition from amateur to pro and learning how to sit down on your punches and finding your power, or do you think those are just incidental and that you're kind of more of a pro boxer, you know, you have a pure boxer style, and they just kind of happen when they happen?
Me, like, also, I mean, my whole career as a pro, no one ever told me, or even in any interviews, they never told me that you have to adjust to a pro style. They always said I always had a pro style. I came into the game with a pro style, and I came up with it. They never told me that I need to work on this to become more of a pro. So,
interesting.
What happened?
Oh,
thank you very much. You know, and I adapted to the game really well. This was me. I fought as a pro, as an amateur. I mean, the style. They want me to switch it up, be more upright, more bouncing, the more 1-2s, just to get in and get out. You know, I didn't really like that. So, you know, I was glad to make that transition to pro. And also, you know, the knockouts that I had, I mean, I knew I had power. I always had. It's just that when the punches come, you know, when I feel it, then I feel it. You know, I fought a lot of good guys, so my knockout ratio is not really that high, as if you've seen on the article. So if it comes, it comes. But more deeper in my career, the more I get in tune with my technique, and when I'm there, the more knockouts will come.
I mean, the more rounds he gets, the better. It's just at the beginning of his career. The more rounds you get, is the better. I mean, look at all these guys not getting no rounds. They're not getting nowhere. Floyd Mayweather, how many rounds he got? 450,000 rounds? He's not knocking nobody out. He's on top of his game. So Mike is not in there trained to knock people out. He's in there to box, get the rounds, show your skills, get your conditioning in while you're in that ring, and do what you have to do, and just have some fun, and let's get up out of there. And that's all it's all about. Later on, when it's time for him to knock him out, he will knock him out. Please believe that. But he do need the rounds. Randy's not getting the rounds. He's knocking these guys out because, like I told you, he's fighting jackass and donkeys. So, I mean, what do you expect? So you want to abase him versus Mike fighting experienced fighters, and Randy fighting these donkeys. What do you want?
Randy just beat an undefeated 8-0 fighter. He's actually got the same record as you, 8-0-1. So I wouldn't exactly call them donkeys. I mean, you guys are both
in the That's one fighter that hit like my sister. He's a good fighter, good technical fighter, real good fighter. I like the kid. But he hits like my sister. He's just tapping you. That's all he's doing.
This guy that hits like your sister, you just said right now, this guy that hits like your sister beat Randy, in your opinion.
Fighter? Because he threw more punches. He threw more punches. The reason why Randy won, because Randy threw heavier punches. He had stronger punches, power punches. That's why he won the fight. But the other kid, reality, he threw more punches. And I thought the game was who throw more punches wins. But California changing the rules around.
That's the amateur game, Repo. This is the pro game. And volume punching, it doesn't really matter as much. It's about clean, effective punching and punches that matter. And then the fight that I watched, and I got to be fair, and I'm not diss on you, Mike, but you know, Repo's denigrating this guy's record. You don't have an undefeated win. You haven't faced an undefeated fighter and beaten him. Randy just did, and he did it very clearly.
Yeah, so now, well, that's why I want one.
You heard that?
That's why I want one. That's why I want one. And I want to show them, you know, Luke. I mean, I have power in my punches, and, you know, if they want to base it on that, okay, good. And then, I thought Alexis, you know, I thought he won the fight because it wasn't, I mean, he had a lot of clean punches, no power behind it, but if he did have power, then the whole game would have been different.
But he just set you up because he just told you he won an undefeated fight and he wants the best. I think you think Randy the best, so that's why he wants to fight the best and he's undefeated.
Repo, don't put words in my mouth. Because actually the next thing I was going to say was from a style standpoint, I'd probably lean towards you guys in this fight. Just because unlike Alexis Santiago, you seem to be able to move and punch and put it all together. Alexis seemed to either be moving or punching. He was kind of either defending or on offense. And you seem to integrate both of them. And you're a southpaw. So I actually would lean towards you guys in this, other than the fact that he's beaten somebody undefeated and you're about to step up to that plateau.
Thank you very much
for the compliment. I really appreciate it. I
just want to see this fight. I think, you got two guys that are familiar with you. Alexis was also – this is a take to note. Alexis was also familiar with Randy Caballero. He had lost him in the amateurs and wasn't successful. Repo Rick, take note. I mean, yeah, you saw a particular fight. You were there live. I wasn't there live. I did get to watch it. I watched it twice just to see because I did get that feedback from some people saying that they felt that he lost that fight. But I'm with Gabriel. I watched it. I thought he was very dominant. I thought he did his job. I thought he was landing the cleaner, effective punches in that fight. Now, going back with Mike Ruiz, who I've been following, too, from the beginning of his career, I got to tell you, this fight between these two young kids, these two warriors, hey, let's make it happen. This is a fight that I think is always needed in boxing, whether it's down the road or now. As a fight fan, I want to see it now. As a fight fan, I want to see Repo Rick in the ring throwing up his dub signs and stuff and talking the trash that he does. It makes the fight more excited and stuff. You know, where you have the whole crowd rooting against you, Repo, that's what you do best.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, thanks. You know what I mean? This is what Team Reese wants. You know, we need this. Well, we don't need this fight in particular, but this is what we're leaning to. And, you know, this is what we want. We need this, you know, for the fight.
So bring it on!
And plus, I thank my promoter, the Goosey Tutors, for putting me through a lot of experienced fighters. I know setting me up with a lot of good fights so I can have enough experience that I have right now and knowing that I know what I can do.
Now, let me ask this. If they do not sign on to this fight, and it all boils down to Cameron Duncan here, what are your feelings and your thoughts about that? I mean, what do you guys think is happening there?
Well, like I told you, I think Kevin Dunn, he's going to wait because he feels that he don't want to destroy his fighter this early. Like I said, it's a money game for some people, you know. So why would he destroy the money now? That's Wells Fargo Bank, Bank of America, saving for later. So he figured he'll wait maybe 8 months down the line to a year. That's probably what Kevin will wait on. He don't want to try to end the kid's career.
And I feel, you know, if I don't happen, okay, we're just going to keep on going. You know, whoever comes next or whatever fight comes my way, I'm always ready. I'm always training. So that's how I see it.
But, Mike, do you feel that it should happen now? Is this the fight that you would really want? And you know, is this the fight that is in your gut that, look, I want this fight. Let's make this fight happen. This is a big fight for your career. It's a big move for your career, not just for yours, but for Randy Caballero at the time. It sparked up enough fire right now. Should you guys let the flame die out?
I mean, I don't want the flame to die because I want this fight in particular because I want to show people what I can do. I want to show people what I've been working for, what I have in store. I want to show people my skills. I want to show people what I can do. Actually, what a good another prospect fighter, another undefeated fighter.
And Randy might not be around later, baby. He get to fight some decent fighters. He might not make it.
Well, then it was never a big fight. You know, that's how I look at it. Like, people go crazy about Bob Arum ruined the Juan Manuel Lopez and Gamboa fight. How could it be a big fight if Lopez lost? What did the fight really mean? If you can't beat Orlando Salido, then why would you ever want to be, why would I want to pay to see you in a super fight? You know, hopefully, this thing builds because it sounds like there's some animosity here. I think the styles are really would mesh really well. Like I said, I tend to favor you. I think Randy's got some flaws. But at the same time, you guys are both with some good people. Goosen knows how to develop fighters. I mean, look what they've done with Andre Ward. They built him up quite nicely. And I think with your skill set, I think the same could be done with you. And we build this thing towards, a really big fight because there's not a lot at your weight class, 122. They're starting to get a little more notice. But, honestly, like Dave says, as a fight fan, I'd see this fight tomorrow because it sounds like it would be a hot fight. But at the same time, I'd like to see you guys both develop and grow into, make it a more meaningful fight, which also equals a more money fight for both of you. Why do this fight for $5,000 when you can do it for $100,000?
Oh, money's overrated, guys. Ruiz, Rico, Rick, money's overrated. Just make the fight happen. Let's just see it boil down with these guys in the ring.
We can do this now, and we can do it later, because we're both in our career that we take a loss, we ain't really going to stop fighting.
And first of all, Mike is a 118-pound fighter. He's a 118-pound fighter, not a 122-pounder. But if we have to go up to get him, we'll do it.
Ooh. Okay, well, there you go. Hey, guys. Hey, guys, thanks again, man, for taking the time to talk to us here on Leaving the Ring. You know, as soon as Randy and his team are ready to get on, as soon as he feels better, we'll get him on, and then hopefully we can get you guys on, and then we can, you know, talk a little bit about boxing here, and hopefully you guys have a match. Hopefully when we get you guys both on, there's both you guys a signature on a contract so we can both get to see, have a chance to see you guys mix it up in the ring.
Thank you.
For the meanwhile, Team Reese, baby, now throw it up.
Thanks very much for having me on this. You know, this is Mike Reese. I'm from Fresno. I'm putting out here for Fresno in the Valley. Thank you very much. You know, this is Team Reese, and thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Hey, our pleasure. Nice to meet you, Mike. You seem like a class fighter, and watching you seem like you have some really nice skills. So it was a pleasure to have you on. And Repo Rip, it's always fun when you're around. It's always entertaining. Thanks for coming on, guys.
Okay, now throw it up, baby. Throw it up.
Throw them dubs up, brother. All right, man. You take
throw
care.
Up, baby.
I like Repo, man. I know there's some people out there that don't like him, but I like Repo, man. Hey, listen.
I don't want to uncover how uncool I am, but what does throw dubs up mean?
He throws the W side, you know, West Coast, man.
Oh, okay. Right.
You got to be gang related, Gabe. You got to be in the gang to understand that, of course, you know.
I wear all black. I was a loner. I'm not a gang guy. I'm a loner.
You got the James Dean look, you know. You got the, what is that? What's the guy that used to sing Pretty Woman type of style look, you know?
Oh, the Roy Orbison. Thanks. Yeah,
There you go. Hey,
Johnny Cash. How about that?
Yeah. You know, my fans, they've been, you know, they're texting, putting on Twitter, Facebook. No, they want to talk Zab Judah versus Amir Khan. They want to talk about the press conference, about who wins that fight, how big of a fight it should be, and why people are undermining Zab Judah in this upcoming fight between these two warriors. Look, this is the funny thing is that Zab Judah's press conference, I'm not undermining them at all. I think Zab's got a really big mega chance of knocking out Amir Khan. I mean, he's got the speed factor in his department. He's a lefty. He's athletic. He's got good feet. Got power, and that that uppercut is something to really look for. It's a thing of beauty. Amir Khan still does not know how to protect himself to an uppercut. So there's so many factors in that fight. Now, the press conference, you know, the press conference is a press conference. You're not going to get a whole lot. Questions are never really that good of a questions, but something did spark interest here. Zab Judah really felt like he doesn't need to talk to the UK press, being that he's not getting any part of the money that is coming out of the UK. He felt undermined. He felt disrespected because the UK, he said, the media, the way it was written, was that he was just looked at this as another fighter, and his feelings were heard about that particular quote there, that he was just another fighter. So Kathy Duva was there expressing why he was not going to answer any of the UK media questions, but said that he's more than willing to answer them after the fight at their post conference. Now, in my opinion, Gabe, I don't know what you thought, but I thought it was a tactic that Zab was using to get under the skin and in the mind of Amir Khan in some ways by kind of disrespecting the UK, you know, feeding off of that, making probably Amir a little bit more confident than he should be. Zab expressing, look, they've been watching my tapes, because that's what Roach and Amir were saying. We've been watching a lot of tapes about Zab Judah. And Zab, you know, Zab was saying, hey, listen, I'm glad you're watching a lot of tapes, but y'all watching the wrong tapes, because this is a new improved Zab Judah. I've been under the tutelage of Pernell Sweet Pea Whitaker. Now, improvement? Oh, God. You know what? How much improvement? I don't really know yet. He's only been in one fight with Whitaker, I believe, right? One fight with him.
Yeah.
Other than that,
this is the second full training camp.
Yeah, this is the second full training camp. You really don't get to see the perks of being with a trainer until after your third, not even your third, your fourth and fifth fight. So Zab, in a lot of ways, is going to be fighting some demons here. This is a guy that's been called a four-rounder, a guy that's been looked at as never a disciplined fighter, never looks at fights the way he should look at them. He comes out, he kind of rides the athleticism part of it that he has. But in some ways and somehow, I don't know why, I'm getting this sense that he is kind of changing. He is taking this fight a little bit more serious. He's looking at this as, I mean, he said, look, every fight I have to win right now. But I think he's looking at this fight here, Gabe, is that crossroad fight. You know, that leap. Corey Spinks, he lost the first time. The second one, he blows him out. Was a lefty, an elusive guy. Amir is not really that elusive. Amir's a guy that uses his speed. He's aggressive. He's going to come forward. But he knows how to box. He does have the amateur pedigree behind him. Zab, he's got his hands full. But it's not to say that he can't accomplish what some people are saying he can't do at this moment.
Well, I look at it this way. I'm looking at their last two fights. You know, the Matisse fight for Zab and the Mabuza fight. You know, the Matisse fight was very close. Some people thought Matisse won. Some people thought Zab won. But it was a very close fight, not a robbery. And then he gets Zab, he gets Pernell Whitaker in his corner, who he sparred with and is very familiar with from his younger days in the sport. They know each other, you know, in a way that few trainers and fighters do. They've actually fought against each other in the ring, at least in the gym. He's looked better. He took out a guy in Kaiser Mabuza who kind of reminds me of a Brady Prescott, big, lanky, 140-pounder, you know, not the heaviest puncher in the world, but heavy enough, you know, kind of dangerous guy, kind of a rough-and-tumble guy. And Zab took him into deep water as he planned to, lured him into the corner, and knocked him out with one punch in the seventh round. He used defense, and not like run around the ring, and they call that defense, but staying in the pocket, slipping punches, and then returning fire, that kind of deep-in-the-pocket defense. On the flip side, look at Amir Khan's last two fights. He was doing real good against Marcos Maidana, and deep in the fight, he gets his world rocked, almost gets stopped. His next fight, I thought he looked absolutely crappy against Paul McCloskey. He blames it on McCloskey. I don't. You know, he says McCloskey
right.
didn't want to fight him. I totally disagree. I think McCloskey had a plan to take him deep, tire him out, and then step on the gas. And that's what it was looking like. And so, you know, they had the headbutt and the fight stopped. So, to me, you got Zab Judah, who's really has his confidence couldn't be higher. He's believing in his new trainer. He's learning some new things. He's learning how to relax in the ring and meet out his energy a little bit. He's on a roll, in short. And then you got Amir Khan, who's kind of, you know, he fired Alex Ariza, then he brought him back. That's a guy looking for answers, in my opinion, who hasn't looked all that impressive, except for the Malignaggi fight. Everything else around it is kind of like, okay. You know, he's got a suspect chin. He doesn't hit all that hard. He's pretty fast, and he's taller than Zab. Those are the things that he brings to the table. Zab brings power. You know, he's got a shaky chin himself, but he's got a ton of experience. He might just be peaking as a fighter at the right time. I mean, he just picked up the belt that he had 10 years ago, 140. It's pretty significant. I like all the intangibles for Zab. I like the style matchup for Zab. I'm liking Zab, and I'm kind of liking him by knockout.
You know, I haven't made my pick. I do like the odds of Zab catching him early or even late. The problem is where Zab, he gasses out, you know. He does rely a little bit too much on that speed, where speed takes a lot out of your muscles. You know, speed takes a lot out of your lungs. Anybody that has a lot of speed, not including Manny, they gas out a little faster because it takes a lot out of your system, you know. So they fight in spurts. Now Amir, he's fast, but he has that kind of speed. He registers it, you know what I mean? He knows how to just, you know, use his hands and box at a normal speed. Then all of a sudden, he can pick it up. And that's what Zab is going to probably have some problems with, because Amir's going to make Zab fight a little bit more than he wants to, the way Mambuza kind of did. Mambuza was coming after him and trying to land a lot of shots, but made that just dumb mistake by walking straight in, and Zab timed him, caught him perfect, you know, with his left hand, and was able to rock him. Amir can make that same mistake, because the thing with Amir, when you watch that Madonna fight, he tends to kind of fall asleep and fall in love with his style and what he does, where he doesn't really look at what's going to be returned back to him. You know, he doesn't stay cautious. He stays cautious for a certain amount of rounds, but once the wheel starts spinning and turning and he gets comfortable, that's when I believe he's more vulnerable. That's where Zab's going to have to really sit back. Let the kid get vulnerable. Let the kid get comfortable and then execute. I think if Zab was to stick to that game plan, and I think if that's what Whitaker is looking at, because Whitaker, in my opinion, was one of the best defense fighters of all time. He was the kind of guy that didn't really sit and rely on waiting. He created openings, but at the same time, he did allow you to feel a little comfortable with throwing volumes of shots, and he picked apart. He picked that apart where he shut you down. Now, can he implement that on his Zab? I don't think so. I think at Zab's career, being 32, 33 years old, you're just going to get the same old Zab, Gabe. I don't know. I know what they're trying to do with Whitaker, and he's going to fine-tune some little things, but it really overall change him? I don't see that happening.
I don't think it overall changed. I think it's more of like a nice tune-up and an oil change. You know, he's
right.
Kind of brought some new ideas to the table. I really get a sense that Zab, is, in terms of conditioning, is really pushing, is being pushed by Purnell. They're having a real camp, and I don't get the sense from the people I've talked to that Zab is running the camp, as has been the case. You know, familiarity can breed kind of apathy, and I think over the years with his dad, their kind of tumultuous relationship, and just observing Zab in the gym, he doesn't really have the strongest attention span, and he didn't really have somebody around him saying, focus in, do this exercise, then do this, then do this. I think he kind of needs that. A lot of fighters do, and he wasn't really getting that. He was kind of left to his own devices, and he got real far on some good skills, but mainly a lot of natural ability. And I think Purnell, you know, 32 is not that old. I don't think it's a complete style overhaul. I think it's just reminding him of things, and it's a matter of minor adjustments. And I saw a lot of that in the Mabuza fight. You know, he just seemed to be a little more in the pocket, a little more comfortable with it, a little more relaxed. Yeah, he took some shots, but he didn't panic whenever he did. I just like him. I'm definitely picking Zab to win this fight. I'm not sure how. You know, whether it's decision or knockout, but
I like Zab a whole lot in this fight. I
do.
Yeah,
I like him enough to pick him. You know, and I don't like hearing Amir, because you were on the call with me.
Right.
You know what I said. You know, was it? Did you get a reason back because you didn't look so good against McCloskey? And he blamed McCloskey. He didn't really want to fight. That's not the fight that I watched.
Right.
He wouldn't stand and trade with you, so you could hit him. You had
exactly.
Trouble hitting him. That's the problem. I got Kid Chocolate ready to go, so I'm going to hop off and go grab him, and I'll be right back.
Go ahead. And fight fans, I apologize if we're not patching in right now. I see a couple guys that want to talk, Judah and Khan. And just stay at home. We're going to have Kid Chocolate really quick and speak to him. Kid Chocolate, if you haven't heard him before on Leave the Ring, really entertaining guy, good guy overall. Fun to listen to, man. He's definitely matches his intelligence department matches his skills. The guy's a smart guy, and he's fun to listen to, and he always answers the questions with pure honesty. I'm going back again. I haven't made my decision stuff. So we're back here. We're back with Gabriel Montoya and Kid Chocolate. What's up, brother?
What's up? How you doing?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm blessed. I'm glad to be on the show.
Hey, your last performance, man, congratulations. You look fantastic. You know, had me rooting for you. And you look great, man. What else is there to say about that performance?
Thank you. I guess when you create moments like that, people want to see you again. So hopefully July 23rd, I can create some more moments and people can keep following me.
Absolutely. Now, you're going to be on the undercard of Zab, Judah, and Khan, right?
Yes.
Now, do you know yet if you're going to be televised? I mean, when we talk about a performance of what you had, now people want to see what you again, get into the mix. Is there a possibility we're going to see you on the network, not on stream?
I highly doubt that. I think they're only going to telecast Zab and Amir. That's what's in demand right now. I have like two or three followers that would like to see me fight. But I guess that don't get you, you know, on the telecast. But I think being in front of the HBO is just going to be good. So, fortunately, maybe in the future you guys can see me, you know, fight on a big network like that. And, you know, I'd be happy to, you know, put on a winning performance.
Man, you didn't tell them that you're Kid Chocolate and you don't mount on a stream, but you mount on a network?
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm just be me, man, regardless fighting in front of three people or fighting in front of 3 million. I'm just going to put in the same effort to win.
Absolutely. Gabe?
We hadn't really talked to you since we just talked last night, but we didn't really talk about your last fight. What were your impressions? You know, just talk to me a little bit about how you felt in there. Was it what you expected?
You know, it's always, I mean, you don't know what you can do unless you just go out there and do it. You know, Jesse was a good fighter, my opinion. He went out there and created some moments with some different guys out there. And, you know, I was looking for rounds, but, you know, unfortunately we didn't go that many rounds. You know, the challenge for me was to say that I wanted to stop him. I didn't want to just, you know, beat him. I just wanted to stop him, you know, in less rounds that Lucien Boutte did. So that was the challenge and the pressure for me to do. And I'm glad that I hurt him in the first round and got him out of there by the third.
Were you surprised, though? I didn't think that it would be that fast, and you hurt him really quick.
Me neither.
You think it was
just, yeah.
Was it the speed that he couldn't deal with?
Well, what can you say when you train as hard as I do and I'm in the gym and I'm dedicated to the gym, I'm dedicated to getting better. So, you know, for me, I knew I was capable of, you know, those type of things. And, you know, I just want to just keep doing those things and don't stop trying to be better, because once you stop trying to do that, then you're no longer good enough anymore. So I'm always trying to work and perfect my game and get better every time. And, you know, people might think I'm crazy to be able to say that, you know, I wanted to fight, you know, the best middleweight out there, which is Sergio Martinez. But, you know, if you don't shoot high at all, then I guess you're going to always, you know, you're going to always be settled with what you got. But I'm shooting high. I want to prove that I'm the best. And I want, you know, the best and bigger name, the biggest names out there, you know. So he's the one that people talk about the most. And, you know, me just reading right now on my Twitter right now, I see that he replied, if that's him, to even say that I have to beat like a James Kirkland or David Lemieux. You know, in all honesty, you know, I'm a guy that's always going out there and just proving that that I can be a winner out of every situation and every, you know, out of every eyes of the doubters, which said that Jesse was going to be my hardest, you know, hardest fight ever, you know what I mean? And for me just to win the way I did just proves that I want to be on to bigger and better things. You know, Tarver Sims, you know, pulled out the fight. Wasn't my fault. This is the type of things that happen in boxing. But I was going out there to prove myself against him to, you know, say that I was better than him. And I knew he wasn't on my level. I just knew that he was stepping up to fight me, and then I was going to bring my A game 100%.
You think, I mean, as a fighter, I mean, obviously you've got a lot of confidence in yourself, and I've seen how hard you work in the gym, and you're a guy that will get in with anybody to get some sparring work. But wouldn't you want a little more seasoning before you get in with a guy with like Martinez? He's got a hell of a lot of fights. You know, he's probably got double the fights that you do. Don't you want to, you know, season a little bit and maybe take on a fellow contender, see that you can do that, and then move to a champ?
I would say that it's, you know, I'm always open for any kind of fight, but, you know, to be honest, I never hear guys ever call me out. You ever hear guys call me out? So I'm always getting guys that people don't want to fight, that, you know, be open to fight me. But like I said,
yeah,
if you don't shoot high at all, then you're only going to settle for what you got. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, David Lemieux, I think, honestly, he has a lot of room to still grow. He's still young. I think he's got a couple more years to polish up his game. But I'm a six-year pro right now, man. No matter if I had injuries sitting out, I'm still a six-year pro. And I'm seasoned, you know what I'm saying? I've been in there with title challengers like Antoine Echoes, maybe an old Antoine Echoes. But like I said, these kind of fights were supposed to be my biggest fights at the time, you know? And I went out there and proved every time, every showing, that I was better than these guys, and they're not on my level. So, yeah, I think Sergio Martinez got more fights than I, but he also the kind of guy that went, you know, fights back and forth with Kermit Cintron, who just lost to Carlos Molina. Not to say that Kermit Cintron is not a good fighter, but this is the kind of fights and the wars that Sergio Martinez has on his resume. He fought, you know, Antonio Margarito, got stopped by Margarito. Maybe that Margarito had that, what you call it, but, you know, my honest opinion, he got stopped by Margarito, which let me know that he's not Superman. no matter what people put on, what pedestal they put him on, he's not Superman. He created moments with Paul Williams that made people remember who he was. But listen, did you see Paul Williams? Maybe Paul wasn't really the same fighter after that fight, but in my opinion, if you look at it, he still made the same mistakes. And if, I believe if Laura had a little bit more power, sleepy time would have been for Paul Williams. You know what I'm saying? So he going out there and fighting guys that, to me, are this mediocre fighters. I think Paul's last good outing was against the guy at 147 pounds.
Quintana?
What's the guy at, Quintana. My second fight with Quintana was his thing, his best outing in years. You know what I'm saying? So that's my opinion, man. You know, I'm only going to speak, and I'm only speaking and trying to just work to get these fights and secure these opportunities for myself. And, you know, like I said, if you don't shoot high, you're just going to settle for having whatever they give you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, Peter, though, you know, after Jesse Brinkley, and you're mentioning, you know, Sergio Martinez, and the first thing that fight fans are going to think of is you're back in the mix on the 23rd at Mandalay Bay Resort under the Zab Judah and Amir Khan fight, but it seems like you're going backwards. Why is your promotional company or your management putting you in with a guy that's lost five times and been knocked out twice when they should be putting you in with some tougher competition? Jesse Brinkley was a high-rated fighter. You blew him out in three rounds. Why are you facing somebody that doesn't even mirror what Jesse Brinkley has done in his career?
Would you say, you know, Tarver Sims is that guy? Because you're thinking about a fight that was like 2 weeks out into my fight. So we had to get whatever, you know, mission, whatever game plan that we had to get together. Because, man, listen, I've been training for 8 weeks for this fight. And if I wasn't out to fight at all, I would be really upset and really disappointed. So I was willing to fight anybody out there that, you know, Golden Boy, my manager, was willing to put me in there with. So
yeah.
The whole thing is, what guy, you know, with that kind on that type of level and that type of stature would just step in last minute? Only a guy that, you know, don't have second chances. That second chances only come one in a lifetime. So a guy, those are the most dangerous guys, in my opinion. Some of those guys that stay in the gym and is working hard to beat a guy like me. So, like I said, I'm not overlooking anybody, and I'm not going to do the job of my manager or, you know, Golden Boy to say what I want and whatever. What you got? Because for me, you know, like I said, I fight King Kong come July 23rd. So it's up to Golden Boy. They've been doing it. That's the reason why I hired them as a promoter to get me and secure me opportunities. I'm just trying to stay busy. Out of the last, you know, 6 months, I done fought. This would be my fourth time fighting. I just told them, you know, keep me as busy as possible. I want to be cut from the old cloth where those guys used to fight all the time. You know what I'm saying? So I just want to stick to my word. I'd like to fight again before the end of the year. Hey, if not, get me back on September 17th, you know, against an opponent on the undercard of Victor and Floyd. I'll be ready. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not speaking, like I said, out of being arrogant or being cocky. I think I'm speaking out of being confident to know that I'm willing to step in at any time to do whatever I have to do.
Now, your blowout of Jesse Brinkley definitely turned heads. I mean, it definitely turned mine. I mean, I knew you going into the fight that you had all the right tools to get at Jesse Brinkley. But in that fashion, I mean, you had to left everybody go, okay, Kid Chocolate's the real deal here. Now, Sergio Martinez is a name that you're looking at and you'll want. You know, you're saying, hey, look, I'm ready for him. I want him. He's telling you on Twitter, get a piece of this guy, get this action first before you can get at me. James Kirtland had a great performance against Dennis Sharp, a guy that you're familiar with that you took out in four rounds. What was your assessment about James Kirtland, and is that a possibility being that you guys are under the same banner?
Well, James Kirtland is 154 pounds. I'm, you know, maybe his fight was at 160 pounds, but maybe he's fighting at a catch weight. I don't think he's moving up in weight to fight 160 pounds. I think he wants to secure a title at 154 pounds. So,
right.
You know, that would be the only reason why Sergio Martinez can be a guy that James Kirkland can fight, because he's fluctuating in his weight. But I'm 160 pounds. I walk around 172 pounds, and I stay close to my weight just to be ready for opportunities like that so I don't have to kill myself. But like I said, anybody that's getting me closer to a world title, you know, I'm willing to step in and do what I have to do. No disrespectful, not to be disrespectful towards James Kirkland, but I'm just looking at Sergio Martinez because he's great at what he does. But honestly, I don't think he even deserved to be under Manny Pacquiao. You know, I think it's a little spin in the face and very disrespectful to be right underneath Manny Pacquiao, who considerably is the best fighter in the world, only because he fought all the fights that he fought. Marquez, the third outing with Marquez, or Margarito, or De La Hoya, or, you know, Roberto, you know, all these guys that he even fought, that I would say he deserves to be on top of the pound for pound list, only because he's one of the busiest fighter at that level fighting as many times as he fight. You know what I'm saying? So Sergio Martinez, well, who is his next fight? Who is he fighting? Some guy named Baker. I never heard of that guy.
I'm a guy
that follows boxing, so I know the guys that's out there. Do you think it could have been a credible more fight that he could have fought against guys that's out there and that's one of the top out there? You know what I'm saying? He wants to fight the best out there, unless the guys don't want to fight him. So he should take the next guys under him, like, you know, James Kirkland. David Lemieux, I think, will have to take a couple more fights, I think, in my opinion, to be able to be ready. And you know, or Kid Chocolate, or, you know, any one of those guys up in there. You know what I'm saying? I'm rated as a super middleweight. I took the fight because I thought it was a great opportunity for me to fight. And, you know, under the circumstances, they agreed on some of the things that I would like to be. Like, I wanted to fight under 163 pounds, but they wanted to fight at 165. And I'm just like, you know, F it. You know, this will be the highest weight I've fought at a catchweight. By not 2 pounds is what, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, for me, I didn't have to really lose that much weight. I just did what I usually do and just went out there and just, you know, just create that moment.
Not at all. I got a text.
Sergio is a good athlete, man. He's a good athlete. Sergio is a good athlete. But far as being a great boxer, being on a level as a Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, who goes out there and put their best foot effort forward and look good in what they do. Not to say that Sergio Martinez don't, but I'm saying, he's just a mediocre fighter to me. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
And, you know, that's what my opinion is on Sergio Martinez. And you know what? I can go up in there and be talking all this crap about this guy, and he kind of go up in there and prove me wrong and give me a spanking, but I'm not looking like that. I'm just saying that I think I could, you know, perform at that level or even higher. You know, I got the great corner with me. I got Freddie Roach. I got Eric Brown. I got Golden Boy, who's willing to back me. I got the hardest working manager, John Seat, working with me. You know what I'm saying? I'm a guy to take his craft seriously. I hire my own publicist. I pay my own publicist. I'm always out there trying to give to the public or do good things and just, you know, be a different fighter and be cut from a different cloth from all these other guys. Not to say I'm not fighting that guy. I'm just saying if Golden Boy thinks it's a good opportunity to fight these guys, I will.
Yeah, you know, I think especially right now the middleweight division is very young. You know, you've got Felix Sturm, who's an established guy. You've got Martinez, who's an established guy. And Martinez is really, you know, the champ. Felix Sturm has had his belt for a while, but he's not really fighting top-level people. I think it's important for somebody, you know, people look around and go, who are the young guys in the division? I mean, you got Pirog, but he's actually 30, 31. Gennady Golovkin is a guy that I would love to see you fight. He's kind of right there at your same development level. I think he's got fewer fights than you, but he's picked up a belt. Have you seen that guy? Have you worked with him at all? What are your thoughts on him?
I worked with him a few times in Wild Card. He's a very strong fighter. Like I said, you don't win battles in the gym.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I'm not saying that it was like he just went up in there and smashed me, because I did read online that's what happened. And I have to say, by all means, I never say what I do in sparring, because I don't want to rub anybody wrong, because I like to work. You know what I'm saying? I like, you know, just to be able to work with these guys and do whatever I have to do. So you'll never hear me speaking out of being arrogant and being in training, because we work with these guys. The gym is the classroom, and, you know, you make and learn all your mistakes there. But we compete at the same level. You know, he's very strong. He's a good fighter. Why did he not fight Felix Sturm? You know, why did not Felix Sturm fight him if he was, like, the number one contender in that division? They made him the interim champion. Why not Felix Sturm fight him? Or why did the WBA belt? Why did he become a super champion? You know what I'm saying? Who has he been to be a super champion? So that's my opinion. And, you know, I really can't say much, man. I'm new to the business. I'm 6 years as a pro, and I'm just now getting to the level where I see different things, and I just ask, why? You know what I'm saying? Why is that happening? Why do they do that? You know,
So I wake up every day and do the same thing. Why am I a boxing writer? Why are there so many champions? You know.
Well, maybe because you may be good at it, though.
Well, we'll see. But, you know, what I like is that, you know, people look around and we're always looking for a guy, you know, that we can identify with, a guy that we can kind of get behind. And you know, with the European influx into the sport, particularly, you know, in the heavyweight division and now kind of in the middleweight division, it is kind of hard to hang your hat on somebody. A lot of people, are, you know, are hanging their hat on Martinez and looking for him, but you always got to look to the future, too, and I think you're a welcome addition, dude. I don't see it. What you're saying is being cocky or disrespectful, because I know that if given the chance, you would take the fights, and that goes a long way with me. You know, so I respect it. You know, I don't think it's a young kid popping off, because you know I'm familiar with you at the gym, and I know any time I walk into the wild card during pro time, you're there and you're working really hard, and you're getting in the ring with just about anybody. You know, so.
Right. And then, you know, the crazy part, I never know who these guys are. So after Freddie's like, oh, you know who that guy is? And I'm like, no. He's like, that guy is this guy. That guy is that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I
didn't
know Arsenio was fighting James Kirkland until after all the spawns with him. I'm like, that guy's fighting Kirkland, you know? So, you know, that is crazy, you know what I mean?
That's so funny. Steve keeps talking about that. Like, he watched you boxing Ishida's ears off. And,
yeah, and
it was really... What's that?
I seen the guy, you know, get frustrated at times. I could see it in his face, but like I said, when you go out there and you put on a performance like that, like you did, that's what makes boxing boxing.
Right. Yeah. Like you said, the fights are won in the gym, but you're not really bragging about the gym war itself. It's just you're just doing the work. But Steve literally said you were outboxing him so badly, he felt bad for the guy because he thought Kirkland was just going to kill him. And
Steve
then,
goes, any fighting a softball? Why do you have him up in there with you? I'm like, Steve, I'm just here to work, and I don't question anything. You know what I'm saying?
Steve said he literally went back like a few days later and had asked some of the other trainers that were, and I think Rashad Holloway was watching, did you guys all see the same thing that I saw? Because I'm now doubting my knowledge as a boxing person, because I watched Peter Quillen just work this guy over, and all of a sudden he works over Ishida, or he works over Kirkland. So one of the craziest things I've ever seen. But, you know, you can never, it's boxing, man. Anything can happen.
Yeah, definitely, man. That's why, you know, all the commotion going back with Khan and Zab, people don't understand, you know, sometimes people, you know, really take a lot of emotion into the ring with them to really perform well. So watch out July 23rd to see who comes out the victor.
Who you got, Matt?
Me, I'm going to be honest. I'm in the same camp as Khan. He's a cool guy. I know Zab through being in New York, so I never want to rub anybody wrong. But I think the fight is almost 50-50. You know, it's a lot of people. From what I read online, a lot of people think Khan is going to get knocked out. Then it's a lot of people that say that Khan is going to last past five rounds, and he comes in and beats Zab Zuda. I even read that Zab, Khan has the power to knock him out. You know what I'm saying? So, like, that's where I stand at. But I don't see him knocking Zab out. I see him, you know, if he was to, you know, to win, it would be in over five rounds, only from what I've seen Zab do in his previous fights after five rounds, you know what I'm saying? But tell you the guys, he can be dangerous at any round. You know what I'm saying? If you make one little mistake with him, he makes you pay for that mistake.
Yeah. I think almost that Zab can kind of afford a couple mistakes in this fight. Well,
right.
I don't think Khan can, like you're saying. You know,
I want to ask you a question, right? Match up Marcos Madonna against Zab Zuda. Who you see winning?
Zabs, very easily. I think he kind of keeps
Zab
at this stage. I think so. I think he's understanding how to deal with a 12 round fight. I mean, granted, you know, it was close with Matisse. But I think Matisse is a little bit better boxer. He's got a little tiny bit more skill, a little bit more speed than Maidana. You know, I think if Maidana caught Zab, there might be some problems. But I think he could put together a game plan where he would easily outbox Maidana.
Right.
That's personally me. That's you know. What do you think?
I just let you know how I think. Well, I think the same way. You know what I'm saying? I think I don't really see him super stopping Maidana. You know. Only because it's harder to champion you have. They said that a champion is not somebody who wins both, but a person that can get off the canvas, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, that guy, he gets up and, you know, he brings it. So I would say that, you know, that's the reason why Style makes fights. And, you know, we don't see Madonna, Zab losing against Madonna. So this makes it an interesting fight between Zab and Amir.
Yeah, I think it's going to be awesome. So I'm going to be out there in Vegas. I'll see you there, man. We're up against
yeah, man,
it here with the time. But thank you for coming on, man. I always a fun interview with you. I'll pass it over to Dave and see if he needs anything, ask any more questions. But always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you.
No, actually, you know, hey, Peter, man, it's always a pleasure to get you on Leaving the Ring. You know, and you know, at the same time, when you're on, when we have any guests on, we write up what you say and throw it out there on Twitter. So a lot of people are very interested of what you're saying about Sergio Martinez, and you know, it's kind of sparked it up a little bit. You know, fans are now arguing about what would happen between you and Sergio Martinez. But hey, thanks again. We are fighting with time. Good luck on your fight on the July 21st, brother, and hope to hear from you after that.
Right. Thank you so much. What happened with, if I was to fight Sergio Martinez, I would probably, like, during in between round, I would probably get my corner, instead of giving me water, feed me pancakes with butter on it.
All right, brother.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right.
Take care.
There you go,
funny.
Man. Peter Quillen, Kid Chocolate on Leaving the Ring. It's funny because, you know, hey, you know what? I like him a lot. And he says he's very direct. And I was telling everybody that before he came on the show. The whole Sergio Martinez, he called him mediocre, which is translates to being he's an average fighter. And fight fans really take that to heart about Sergio Martinez because fight fans have grown to love Sergio Martinez because of his accomplishments and what he's been doing. You know, he's a likable fighter. I like the fighter. I'm a big fan of Sergio Martinez, but I'm starting to become a big fan of Kid Chocolate here. We got to do our fight schedule. Now, fight fans, I know you guys have been on hold, so we'll take one call really quick, but we got to make it fast because we got a fight schedule. Not a whole lot happening this weekend, but there is a particular fight that I'm looking forward with, which is Alejandro Perez. He's going to be fighting Showbox against Diego. God, what's his last name? What's the kid's last name? Hold on.
Magdaleno.
Magdaleno. Magdaleno. That's going to be a hell of a fight. But let's patch in Leon, who's been waiting patiently for us to patch him in. You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. Brother, what's on your mind?
What's going on, guys?
How you doing, brother?
All right, I wanted to talk about the Khan thing just for a minute, man. I heard you guys talking about how he was kind of saying that he wouldn't speak with the UK press at the press tour. But
yeah.
He knew from day one that he wasn't getting any of the pay-per-view and all that. I remember when Timothy Bradley and Amir Khan were doing their little thing. They actually offered him a piece of it. But when he dropped out, I guess, you know, they basically gave Zab Judah the leftovers. And he knew that from day one, so that was nothing new. I think that was just a ploy to try to get under Amir's skin.
I think so, too. That's what I was saying, too. I think that was his way of getting at Amir Khan a little bit.
Well, that and this was kind of the last time, you know, all the media kind of gathered. You know, they didn't really do a conference call before this, as I remember.
Right.
So this is kind of the first time that everybody kind of gathered around them. And, you know, I don't, in my own, you know, primetime pay-per-view, they actually got mad at us, or got mad at me. One of the heads of it actually is a part owner of Max Boxing, as it turns out. And I didn't know that. And he got mad at me because I thought it was hilarious. But to me, you know, if you're telling me that you're such a big star that you don't need my name, I could be anyone in the UK, and I would sell this pay-per-view. Then good luck to you. Sell it yourself. I'm not gonna talk to the media. I'm not gonna help you drive sales for something
right.
I'm not gonna get a boost of. You know, lots of luck. Enjoy that. You know, and you know what? That's Zab's right. They treated him like a second-class citizen. Well, you know, as we say in Spanish, toma, enjoy it. You know?
now you know, Leon, that Gabriel means business when he starts talking in Spanish. Toma, there's business there, brother.
It's a rarity. I roll it out on special occasions. I just put on my flannel and I'm only buttoning the top button.
So who's your pick? Who are you going with? I mean, who do you think is going to win on July 23rd?
Oh, man, you know, Zab, supposedly he does kind of fade late in fights, but I still got to give it to Zab, man. He has the experience, he has the power. And Khan, I think Khan is still kind of being just thrown down our throat, man. I like his style technically. He's a good boxer, but I think once he gets hit on the chin, and if he gets caught one of them straight rights by Zab, it's good night. Because Floyd almost got knocked out with that, so I know if he gets caught on the chin, he's not getting up. So I got to go with Zab. I think if he goes into later rounds, it might be, you know, it might go back and forth. I got a feeling if somebody goes down, it'll definitely be Khan, and I got to give it to Zab. How you
Zab? Well, that and Amir gets hit by that uppercut, and Zab, one of his best punches is the uppercut. You know, he put those two things together, the southpaw style. You know, somebody was telling me that Mercito Gesta was making Amir miss and making him pay quite a bit. That was some of the sparring he used for this fight, which is great sparring for it. Although he's nowhere near as elusive, I think, as Zab. Not as quick in the upper body as Zab is. You know, he's a good fighter, but he's not quite there yet. I just can't help but keep thinking Zab's on a roll, Amir's not right now. That's just how I look at it. You know, they've marketed him as this star, but I just don't buy it.
I hope Sweet Pea is working on Zab's combinations. I hope he doesn't plan on going in there and knocking him out with one shot. I hope the number one thing in this fight is speed and his combinations. I think that'll win him the fight.
Yeah, I agree. They can't be looking for one shot, or it's going to be Amir outboxing and outworking him and sticking him with that jab, and Zab just kind of looking at him, hanging out in space and waiting for that right moment, which may never come. You're absolutely right.
Exactly. But I'm not going to hold you guys up. I know you got a lot of calls, man. You know, looking forward to the next couple weeks in boxing, and I'll give you guys a call a little later.
Hey, brother, thank you for calling in, man. Really appreciate it. You take care.
No problem. You guys have a good one.
You too.
At the same time, I'm over trying to – let's do that fight schedule really quick. And we only have about, 4 minutes. Let's rush right through it.
Okay. We won't even stop for picks. At the Friday night, at the Roseland Ballroom in New York, ESPN2 Friday Night Fights, Paul Wolak, 29-1 versus Delvin Rodriguez, 25-5-2. In support of that, Raymond Serrano, 15-0 versus the dreaded TBA.
I got Wolak, man, by KO. I think he's going to knock out Devon Rodriguez.
I think he's going to steamroll his ass. Yeah, absolutely. At the Texas Station Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, Showtime, Showbox. Diego Magdaleno, 19-0 versus Alejandro Perez, 15.
Great fight.
But
you know,
one,
the thing about Alejandro, we've had him on. I know Alejandro from the beginning when he was undefeated. This is a kid that Golden Boy is pretty much using as a guy to see whether or not where they're at in their career-wise. You know, he's faced plenty of undefeated fighters. He's faced guys that need to know whether or not they're at the crossing roads. Alejandro Alacran Perez is a tough cookie to crack. This guy's going to bring it to Diego Magdaleno. Magdaleno is an undefeated fighter. He's in for a rude awakening if he thinks he's going to have a smooth road with Alejandro. Alejandro gave Rico Ramos all fits when they had faced each other, and he knocked out Antonio Escalante. This is a great fight. Again, though, Perez is coming in as the opponent.
I'm taking Diego Magdaleno. I think he's just... I think he's a much better boxer than Rico Ramos, who was too fast and too agile, too quick for Perez. I don't understand why off such a great win over Antonio Escalante that they put him in with such a style nightmare for him, you know, kind of a mismatch. Or not a mismatch, but you know what I mean? It's not a great style for the guy.
No,
I think Magdaleno's really coming into his own right now. I wasn't very high on him early on. He just looked like he could be kind of not a Rico Ramos type, but potential for a lot of long, boring nights. And in the last few fights, he's really come on and really understands his power, how to sit down. I think he's going to be an exciting little guy. You know, I really do.
You know, and this is the thing, too, here, Gabe, is that Diego Magdaleno has the perfect opportunity of knocking out a guy that's been looking good in his last previous fights, Alejandro Alacran Perez. And like I said, this kid Perez is a workhorse type of fighter. He's throws a great body shot. But the thing is, he has no head movement. He comes forward. You know, there's really no change in style what he's going to do. You know exactly what is going to be the blueprint when he comes into the ring, and that's going to muscle forward. He's a strong guy, but he can be hurt. He's been rocked before. So Diego Magdaleno can make a spectacular win over Alejandro Perez, or he can have a tough time with a guy that's going to come forward. But he has a great possibility of stopping Alejandro just because of the head movement is not there for the kid.
Yeah, I got him by stoppage. Also on that card, Casey Ramos, 13-0, versus Joselito Colado, 12-0. I don't know a hell of a lot about these guys. Underneath that, Andy Ruiz, a heavyweight out of the wild card. A lot of guys really like him, got great combinations. 10-0 versus Billy Bloomfield. It's kind of a stay-busy bout. He's
right.
9-6-1. Moving on, at the Coliseo Salamo in Catano, Puerto Rico, Telefutura, Abner Cotto, 10-0 versus Carlos Claudio, 10-6-3. In support, Jason Velez, 15-0 versus Carlos Valsarcel. 12-2-4. Also in Germany that day, Corin Gibor, 31-6 versus Nikolai, Russian guy, 20-0. Moving on to Saturday night, at the Olympia Sportzentrum in Munich, Germany, Marco Hook, 32-1, so easy a caveman can do it, versus Hugo Garay, 34-5 for the WBO cruiserweight belt. It's in Germany. Hook's going to win if he stays on his feet. At the Plaza del Toro in Cancun, Mexico, Ramon Gonzalez, 28-0, versus Omar Salado, 22-3-2 for the WBA junior flyweight belt. Also on that card, Juan Manuel Marquez versus Licar Ramos, 52-5-1 versus 24-3. And then also on that card, Rafael Marquez versus Esabio Oseo. Who is like 19-9-2. I wonder who's going to win that fight. In England at the Echo Arena in Liverpool, Ricky Burns versus Nicky Cook, and John Murray versus Kevin Mitchell is in support. Also in Honolulu, Julio Cesar Miranda versus Brian Valoria for the WBO flyweight belt. And that wraps up your weekend fight schedule.
There you go. Here on Leaving of the Ring, I apologize for last week. But it's always fun to be back, man, and it's fun to know that there's people out there that actually tune in and listen to us here. Two guys that like to talk boxing. 3 hours of boxing talk. We always say it here on Leaving the Ring. It's not a sport to us. It's a lifestyle. I'm signing off. Dave Duenas, Gabriel Montoya, Leaving the Ring, My Boxing Fans official radio show, which you're... producer David Chen. Until next week, you guys have a good weekend. Enjoy the fights. Don't drink and drive. Be safe. Barbecue and have a good time.
Yep. I'll see you next week. Enjoy the fights.